KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
This time of year, you start dreaming of fountains and the rain on the sidewalks of Rome. Remember that year when we finally went there, and the first thing you dreamt of was home. And you were a witness to my lack of conviction as we toured every steeple and dome. When we got back, it took a week to unpack, and you sent all your postcards from home. This time of year, you dream of mountains and oceans, but you can't see the tide for the foam. Oh, remember that year when we drove to the mountain, and the first thing you dreamt of was home. And I was a witness to your lack of direction as you poured over the mine like a tome. When we got back, it took a week to unpack, and you sent all your postcards from home. This time of year, like to look through old photos, like you're using a fine-tooth comb. Well, remember those years, all them Dorothy's and Toto's, and the places we thought of as home. There you are in the garden, with your hands in the soil, trying to turn all that clay alone. We may not have much wandering left in us. We can send out some postcards from home. Send out some postcards from home.
All right, hello everybody, it's Mike, and it is KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, Radio Orbit, coming to you every Monday, 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. in the morning on, well, like I say, every Monday night. Do it again tonight. It's about 5 after 11 right now on the 9th of April, and it's a pleasure to be with you all here. Big thank you to Debbie Johnson, Free Range Radio Theater, as always every week at 10 p.m., an hour before this program. Just had a phone call, actually, for Debbie, somebody appreciating her program and wanting to get a little bit more information. So don't be surprised, Deb, if you get a phone call in the next couple days. But anyway, she does it every Monday, 10 p.m., Free Range Radio Theater. Before that, Kelvin and Jason, Jazz plus Blues equals Winter Again. Tech Radio, as always, interesting stuff, keeping us up on the world of gadgetry and high technology. Jeff Wheeler, every Monday, starts things off 3 to 5 p.m. with Uncommon Light. Great radio, great music, great talk, lots of great stuff. Your imagination station. It's good to be here with you and a part of it all every week. So here we go again. Thanks to everyone who listened to the program last week and enjoyed it. A gigantic thank you to my friend, Terrence McKenna. Left us 7 years and a week ago, plus or minus, today. And with us every day, though. So thank you, T. And anyhow, remarkable, absolutely amazing stuff from Terrence last week. The story of how he sort of became who he was, his brother as well. The outrageous story of La Chorrera and the experiment that took place there 36 years ago, about which we are still, you know, speculating and anticipating, perhaps. Well, we also heard some great independent music. Lots of nice comments about the tunes last week, actually. We heard a bunch of songs from Spangl, a real cool and unique sounding band from the UK. That's 3 weeks in a row. Now, I've actually had 3 weeks where people sent me email, actually said they liked the music. So we'll try to make it four in a row tonight. That shouldn't be too difficult. We have Noah Earl featuring Noah's music tonight on the program. Noah was actually here a few weeks ago, and I'll tell you a little bit more about him in a minute. But back to last week's program, if you missed it, it is on the web, www.mikehagan.com, in the program archives. You can go there and download it, stream it, whatever. Check it out for yourself. Share it with your pals if you like. And, you know, make what you will of it, okay? All right, tonight, what are we doing? Tonight, well, it's about time, actually. We have the Bard back on the air, Kent Stedman, the wonderful wizard behind cyberspaceorbit.com, and about my best friend in the world, frankly. So for regular listeners, Kent requires no introduction. He's wonderful. He's been on the program many times. But for those new to the show, you can check him out and his amazing work at www.cyberspaceorbit.com. Cyberspaceorbit.com. And we'll have some great music, like I said, tonight from Noah Earl. Noah was on the program on the 5th of March, speaking of La Chorrera. But he's great, and just released a new CD last weekend. I actually went to the release party and had a wonderful time. It was Saturday night, and got to hear Noah play. And also this little up-and-coming band here in town called the Cotton Mollies, who've actually been on the program here, too. So anyway, it was fun, and we opened the show there with a title track from Noah's new CD. It's called Postcards from Home, and I just love it. And we'll hear more from Noah, well, in just a minute, actually. But if you're interested in the music that I play on the program, all the music that we feature here is available on my website as well. Just go to Mike Hagan, HHEAN.com, and click on the music archives, all right? And you can find out, you know, information and MP3s and all this stuff about, you know, musicians who have been here on the program, okay? Same thing with Noah tonight. You can find him over there as well, okay? All right, so stick around. Stay on board here. Speaking of Jeff Wheeler, I got him here in the studio with me. Hey, Jeff, want to say hi? Hold on. What do we got? What mic is that?
Two.
Two. Yeah. Hey.
How's it going?
Pretty good. How you doing?
Doing great.
Jeff Wheeler, you know, I mention Jeff every week. He does a show earlier in the day on Mondays, and he wears a number of hats here at the station, I guess. But anyway, he's usually here sometime around the beginning of the show, and he is tonight, and actually in the studio, so we just want to say hey. Hi.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm all right.
Yeah. C3 played this past weekend, too.
Yeah, the Solstice, or the Equinox show.
Yeah.
down at the Roadhouse.
Yeah, it was great.
Tell us about that, actually.
It was pretty cool. The vibe was there. Pete Skolka sat in and played guitar and keyboards.
Awesome.
And we just hit a groove, and it was magical.
For people who for people who aren't familiar with C3, tell them about your musical project.
Well, it's called the C3 stands for the Convergence Conspiracy Collective Psychotto Electro Orchestra, and we play four times a year at the solstice and equinox, and we're going to stop playing on the winter solstice of 2012. Because, as most of your listeners know, that's a pretty important time.
We're hoping.
Yeah. Yeah, if we make it that far.
Yeah.
But, that's our plan, and we don't take any of it too seriously. We just like to get together and have a good time and play music.
Yeah, it's a great idea to hang your hat on, if nothing else.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great. And for people out there who haven't seen C3, I've I haven't seen all their shows. They've done what are you on version what yet?
This was V17.
V17.
Yeah.
So they've done this now going on 5 years,
right.
And I've seen a few of the shows in between, and they're always interesting and they're always different and unique. And this last weekend they did it actually at a place here in town we call the Holy Roadhouse for those initiated, but it's
right.
Lizzie West and Tony's place down
yeah.
there on
St. Joe Street.
Yeah. Well, cool. You had a good turnout. Lots of people came down.
There were about 20 people, and the people that were there to listen, and they were very receptive, and we fed off of that, and it was pretty amazing.
All right. Well,
heard
cool.
some of the raw footage today of the audio recording.
You recorded everything,
yeah?
Yeah. Excellent.
And right. Scott Wilson was there to videotape. So.
Oh, so you have both audio and video.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you guys are doing great stuff, and every time you do it, it becomes a bigger and better thing, I think.
Yeah.
So the next one is in June, I guess.
Yeah, at Bird Island, the Peace Conspiracy Camp Out.
It's on the river somewhere.
It's down on the Niangua River, south of Camdenton. It's definitely off the grid. No cell phone, no wireless. Great. It's just a big Peace Conspiracy Camp Out, and you know, lots of tie dye and patchouli and. You know, playing music. It's fantastic.
All right. Well, everybody, again.
June 23rd.
June 23rd on a Saturday, I guess, right?
Yep.
All right. And Jeff Wheeler does Uncommon Light. Tell people about the show on Mondays, if you will.
Yeah, it's some experimental stuff, anything that you won't hear on commercial radio. Lately, I've kind of picked up on the eclectic... new edge music for dangerous times, dangerous music for dangerous times, because we are certainly in dangerous times. Some cutting edge, you know, Trey Gunn, King Crimson, that kind of stuff.
Right.
You know, stuff that's polyrhythmic and just out there.
Yeah, no doubt. Jeff does a really interesting show, no question about it. So
thanks.
All right, well, Jeff, thank you. All right.
Yeah.
And everybody, check him out, Jeff Wheeler, Uncommon Light, 3 to 5 p.m. every Monday. And also, if you get a chance, if you're lucky enough, C3 every 3 months here in Columbia or thereabouts.
Yeah, and we're on the web all over the place.
Yeah, c3.us,
yeah.
And it's the letter C, the number 3.
No, it's CEETHREE.us.
My mistake, okay.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, everybody, Jeff Wheeler, take care, bud.
Hey, thanks.
All right, see you. All right, let's play another song here from Noah Earle. This one's called Butter and Bread. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Back in a few minutes.
Well, the sump pump's busted and the water is high. We'll never be able to keep the basement dry. It's where we keep our heirlooms and all our junky old stuff. For prices, medallions, to empty cans of snow. Living on the same side of the street as you. We've got some mods to beat, but that's nothing new. So we plug on through. Plug on through. We plug on through. We're the butter and the bread and the red, white, and blue. So it's government grape juice and it's government cheese and enough powdered milk to make you tremble in the knees. The alimony runs out with every tiny expense. When we talk about going without, it's in the present tense. Living on the same side of the street as you. We've got some odds to beat, but that's nothing new. So we plug on through. Plug on through. We plug on through. So we're the butter and the bread of the red, white, and blue. Started working at the feed mill, but they tore it down. Rezoned residential and it just broke ground. So I'm working at the hospital now, cleaning out the bedpans. But it don't feel right to touch my kids with these filthy hands. Living on the same side of the street as you. I've got some mods to beat, but that's nothing new. So plug on through.
plug on through, plug on through. I'm the butter and the bread of the red, white, and blue. Well, we don't need much, but we would like more, and our final judge will settle the score. Living on the same side of the street as you. Got some odds to beat, but that's nothing new. So we plug on through. Plug on through, plug on through. We're the butter and bread of the red, white, and blue. We're the butter and the bread of the red, white, and blue.
What's your favorite kind of music? Jazz, folk, classical? If you pledge to KOPN online at kopn.org, you'll automatically be entered into a drawing to win a trip for two to take in one of three music festivals this summer. The sweepstakes is called Public Radio Takes You Places, and the winner of the drawing will win a trip and deluxe accommodations to your choice of one of three great American music festivals: Newport for folk music, Santa Fe for opera, Monterey for jazz. Where will you choose to go? All the details are online at kopn.org, and while you're there, make a pledge to support KOPN. Choosing Help Keep It Quiet on KOPN is easy. Picking your destination will be hard. Help Keep It Quiet today, only on your listener-supported community radio station, 89.5 FM, KOPN Columbia, and streaming on the web at kopn.org.
All righty. Thank you, Angela. And it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. 89.5 FM, yeah, about 19 minutes after the hour of 11 p.m. now on the 9th of April, 2007. And we heard another song from Noah Earle there just a minute ago. That was called Butter and Bread. Good stuff from Noah on a new CD just released on, what is it, Mayapple Records, Noah? I don't have my glasses on, and it's dark in the studio, so that's my best guess. Anyway, I know it's called Postcards from Home, and I got to see Noah perform a bunch of songs from it the other night on Saturday, and it was wonderful. So anyway, thanks for making great tunes and being a gentleman about the whole business as well. All right, thank you, Noah. And, well, let's see. What should we do here? Well, let's just say hello, all right, to everybody listening this evening on KOPN, over the traditional airwaves or over the Internet, live or otherwise. Every Monday we broadcast a show from the studios of KOPN in downtown Columbia, Missouri. And we stream the show live as well on the web, kopn.org. Just go over there and click on the Listen Live button. You'll get a nice 64K stream, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And if you're interested in hearing this program and you have a slower connection, maybe a dial-up or something like that, I can be heard on Monday nights on CosmicWavesRadio.com. That's CosmicWavesRadio.com. The wonderful people over there provide a stream for me, you know, just for this sort of 3-hour window on Monday nights and early Tuesday mornings. And that's a 24K stream, so it's a little bit less taxing on your Internet connection. All right. So regardless, KOPN at kopn.org or cosmicwavesradio.com. You can listen over the web. And if you're in mid-Missouri here, hopefully you're listening over the, you know, the airwaves like we always have. Okay. Anyway, thanks to everyone who makes it happen, either way, live on the radio or on the net. And thanks also to my good friend Larry, the web wizard, as always. Hope to have him back soon. I know I'm not very good at getting the site updated quickly and accurately. I've made a bunch of mistakes in the last few weeks, but anyway, trust me, it's just a temporary thing, and Larry will be back with us real soon. He's just a few days away from moving back to Hawaii, and once he gets settled up there, I think we'll be back in business, all right? So regardless, Larry's the best, and thank you for everything you do for us, okay? Anyway, thanks to everybody out there who's sending art, music, poetry. I love it, and I appreciate it. Send more. We'll put it up on the website, find a place for it, share it with other people, okay? Check it out. Let me know what you think. If you do it yourself, go on over to MikeHagan, HAGAN.com, and you'll have access to everything we're doing over there, and take a look around. Share your thoughts with us. It's easy to do. There's a active forum that's always busy and lots of interesting topics being discussed over there. I mentioned a minute ago that I was not being very good at getting the site updated, and one of the things that I've really slacked on since Larry's been sort of on the disabled list is the news. I've totally been lame about the news. I haven't been updating the news site very much. And the substitute, though, is the forum, because luckily the people that participate in the forum put the news up for me. And lots of interesting stories and ideas and philosophies and all kinds of different things being distributed and thought about and talked about and chatted about and debated about over there at the forum. So if you go to the website, click on the Radio Orbit forum link and you can go see what people are talking about. All right, there's always, you know, breaking news and interesting stuff happening over there, okay? Tonight, as every night on Monday, we have a live chat room where people can discuss amongst themselves and chat with me during the program. Hello to everybody over there. I love the fact that we can do that during the program. I'll slip over there in a few minutes and say hello. And I encourage my guests as well as listeners to join us over there in the chat and in the forum, you know, when we're not on the air. And the chat room you can use anytime. Doesn't matter if we're on the air or not, you know. So anyway, I'd appreciate everyone letting me know if you think the stuff we're doing is good, bad, or ugly. I'm certainly open to your opinions and criticisms and comments and whatever. My email address, if you want to do that, is orbitradio, O-R-B-I-T-R-A-D-I-O, orbitradio at AOL.com. You can send me email, and I encourage you to do that and send email as well to my guests and musicians who appear on the program. Everybody loves to hear what you have to say about their work and their research, you know, so, and their art. So feel free. That's what we're here to do, to communicate back and forth, right? The web gives us the ability now to do that with very little effort. So for all of us lazy monkeys, it's not that hard to talk these days. So get on the web, do it up, let us know what you think, okay? One more time, the website, www.mikehagan.com. And the phone number here in the studio, if we open the phone lines a little bit later with our guest tonight, we may do that. The number is area code 573-443-8255. Okay? All right. Let's see. It's about 11:25. What are we going to do tonight? Did I even say so? Kent Stedman. The Bard, back on the air. All right. So we'll have Kent with us in about a half an hour or so, maybe a little bit more than that, 35 minutes. But between now and then, we'll do, well, I talked to Star Newland. I have a few announcements to make. Let's talk about upcoming guests real fast, and we'll get that out of the way. And then we'll move along. All right, tonight, like I said, the 9th of April, Kent Stedman, the Bard from cyberspaceorbit.com. Get a leg up, go on over there, see what he's up to. It's amazing. You can spend years. You can spend, literally, I mean, you can spend years just digging deeper and deeper into cyberspaceorbit.com. There's now probably going on 11 years of absolutely outrageous and courageous and wonderful and fascinating and astonishing work that has been done by one guy. I mean, basically one guy. Go to my website and look at the image that I have up of Kent right now. I mean, this is him. This is Kent in the cave. I call it the cave in Seattle. But it's just a very unassuming, comfortable little apartment where he and his family live in an area just outside of Seattle, Washington. And from that little corner that you see right there on my website, on the front page there, you know, that's where it all happens. And it's remarkable what this man has done. And if you don't think so, well, you're just not paying attention. So anyway, Kent Stedman tonight. He'll be with us in about 35 minutes, and I can't wait to talk to the Bard. He hasn't been on the air with us for a little while, and it's always a pleasure to have have him with us and sharing his thoughts and ideas about what's happening around the world. Okay? So tomorrow, well, not tomorrow, but next week, on the 16th of April, Susan Weed. If you want to find out about an amazing woman, go to her website, SusanWeed.com, SusanWeed.com, amazing woman. And we'll have Susan with us next week, live on the 16th of April. Richard Allen Miller, I think, I'm hoping for the 23rd of April with Richard Allen Miller, another amazing guy who's been through and about so many different things over the last 30, 40 years or so. I'm still working on Paul Stamets, we'll see. Bee Wilson, I'm trying to get her on the program to talk about the honeybee situation. Dr. Patrick Flanagan, just need to set the date. Paul Laffoley, the amazing Paul Laffoley, outrageously talented architect and artist, backed by popular demand on the 21st of May. Gary David, the author of Orion and the Hopi, coming up soon. Dr. Richard Tarnas, the author of Cosmos and Psyche, and Passion of the Western Mind before that, and many other books and papers. John Major Jenkins, can't wait to talk to John again very soon, okay? Jeff Stray, we'll have Jeff back on the air soon. Barbara Ehrenreich, working on that. Music, Walter Alias, Devochka, Marcy Playground, tonight Noah Earle. And just really excited about all the stuff that we're doing on the show and that we're going to continue to do. The summer's going to be amazing, and I look really forward to it, all right? Okay, I think we'll do space weather with Kent, because he knows more about that than anybody else, so I won't embarrass myself. I'll wait for him, and I'll play a piece of music here, play another song from Noah, and we'll come back, talk about a few things, do a little bit of news maybe, and we'll have Kent Stedman at the top of the hour, at noon, at midnight, okay? All right, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit. It's KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. On the web, KOPN.org. And this is Noah Earle. The song is called Head in the Sand.
Do you dream of striking it rich on a cold, damp night without a tent to pitch? Or hold out hope that when the bars all close, some kid will buy your bottle. Time is getting spent and your money is blown.
Do you feel guilty getting your rocks off at the strip club? Do you think about drowning every time you fill the bathtub? Loosen your belt if you start to chase from the waistband. Your nose is in the air and your head in the sand. Head in the sand, head in the sand, head in the sand. To make noise, say what you will about the good Lord above, but how are we supposed to live without sexual love? If you're a doctor, you got to heal the sick now. If you're a gambler, you got to take your pick now. Dispense love when it's in demand. Shake yourself loose if your head's in the sand. Say your head's in the sand, head's in the sand, head's in the sand.
All right, Noah Earl, one more time. New stuff from Noah, and that's called Head in the Sand. It's from a new release called Postcards from Home. You can check Noah out on the web at Noah Earl, N-O-A-H-E-A-R-L-E, NoahEarl.com, and you can find him at MySpace as well, MySpace.com/NoahEarl. All right, speaking of great music, I want to talk about a couple things here. So I've mentioned a couple times on the air over the last few weeks that we're going to do a show at the Blue Fugue, a KOPN benefit in May. Well, we've got the thing sort of put together now, and this is sort of the official announcement of what we're going to do, and you'll hear more about it over the next few weeks. But it will be on the 4th of May. It's a Friday night, May 4th, 2007, and here's who's going to be playing. All right, we're going to start early. We're going to do a happy hour party show with Rutherford, Ruth, and Jeff. I spoke with them just the other night, and I'm really excited that they agreed to do the show. So Rutherford, early, probably 6 o'clock or so. Big Medicine, sometime after that, maybe 7:30. John Henry and the Engine around 9 o'clock. Caulfield and the Magic. In Thicket, Derek and his band, can't wait to see them. Michael and Casey, of course, with Caulfield and the Magic before them. And Bachman, Sean, Danny, and the gang, closing things out probably around midnight on the 4th of May. So Rutherford, Big Medicine, John Henry and the Engine, Caulfield and the Magic, In Thicket, and Bachman, all in the same night. All right, this is a local music extravaganza, and I'm totally excited about it, and I hope that y'all come on down and check it out. It's going to be awesome. All right, so we'll probably record some of the stuff, and I'm sure there'll be, you know, music available there. It'll be a opportunity to come down, see some great local music, regional music, you know, national music in some cases. You know, some of these guys are, you know, have great listener bases around the country, and they certainly tour a lot around the Midwest here, all these guys. So anyway, it's going to be great, and I'm excited about it. And I thank my friends down there at the Blue Fugue for providing the venue for us. And we'll see if we can raise a little bit of money for the radio station. Okay? All right, so that's coming up. Like I said, May 4th. You'll hear more about it in the near future. Okay? All right, what else? Well, hello. I want to say hi to my new friends over at Vox Magazine. Nisa, Sarah, Dusty, everyone else over there. Putting out a great magazine here in town. And I appreciate your efforts and your art. On the web, you can check them out at www.voxmagazine.com. You know, there's a lot going on in town that you just have to be sort of looking out for. And, you know, again, it's what I always say. You have to be paying attention. But if you're paying attention, well, there's a lot of good stuff happening around here. And I appreciate the girls and the guys that are working down there at Vox and putting out great stuff and, you know, working hard to share ideas and information and again, and art. And there's a lot of other stuff happening around this town, too. And if you're looking out and keeping your eyes open, you can really, you know, enjoy it and learn a lot in the meantime. All right. So anyway, hi to everyone at Vox, and thanks for doing what you do. All right. Okay. What else? I spoke with Star Newland, Michael Heisen's associate and partner there at the Sirius Institute in Puna, Hawaii. And Star's wonderful and doing a lot of great work. And we really hadn't talked in the last couple weeks, but I knew she was going to go to Russia to do some sort of project over there. And anyway, we talked today, and I happened to be at the radio station when we talked, so I figured I would just record a little piece with her, which I did, and I'll play it for you now. And you can hear a little bit about what Star Newland and Dr. Michael Heisen are up to and the wonderful work that they are continuing to do in Hawaii and elsewhere, now around the world. So here it is, Star Newland from the Sirius Institute. You can find information about Star on the web at www.planetpuna.com. And, of course, they've been on the program, Star by herself a couple of times, and with Michael a number of times as well. And you can find those shows in my archives, like all the other archives. All right. So anyway, one more time, Star Newland from the Sirius Institute, and a wonderful woman who I love and have a great respect and appreciation for. And you can hear a little bit about what she's up to right now.
Hello, everybody. It's Mike Hagen back with you here. It's Radio Orbit, and I've got my good friend Star Newland on the line with me. Sort of an impromptu little phone call that we just sort of happened across this afternoon, but she's got a lot of interesting things happening, so I figured we'd record a quick little piece here. So without further delay, Star, hello.
Aloha, Mike.
Aloha. Hi. How are you?
Great. How are you? Happy Easter Monday.
Thank you, and to you too.
Thank you.
Hey, we don't have a whole lot of time here, so let's tell the people what's happening. For people who aren't familiar, Star is an associate of Dr. Michael Heisen. They work together in Hawaii doing many wonderful things, and they've been on this program a number of times, but what's the latest, Star?
Well, thanks for asking, and the latest is that I have organized a presentation to bring to the 15th Annual International Conference on Conflict Resolution in St. Petersburg, Russia, May 6th through the 11th, next month, less than a month now, and I'm bringing over a group of 8 presenters, including myself, Dr. Michael Heisen, Dr. Elizabeth Rauscher, world-famous physicist, mm-hmm. and basically an equivalent to Einstein, which is pretty remarkable. Another lady, Sheva Carr, who is a heart math facilitator. My Hawaiian friend, Aka Dooley, who is a Hawaiian cultural expert. And Ken Iwanaka, who's one of our partners with our Dolphin Habitat and Birthing Center. Michael Kastenbaum, who's with Zero Pictures, who's our videographer, who will be presenting as well as doing video for us, and our dear, dear friend and partner, Philip Bailey, who is executive assistant to Dr. John C. Lilly, the late Lilly,
right.
and who is currently president of the John C. Lilly Institute.
Wonderful.
So, yeah, we have a group of 8 individuals going over to present a program called The Consciousness of Harmony from Hawaii with Aloha.
Yeah, we need more aloha spread about this place, you know?
We do. Well, they recognized it, too. This is being presented through the Common Bond Institute out of Michigan, and Steve Olween is their director, and he's working in collaboration, again, with the Harmony Institute out of Russia, which is the second largest psychology institute in the country.
Are there websites for either of those?
Well, the website for the whole thing is on Planet Puna, www.planetpuna.com. That's our usual website, and it's right there at the top. The Common Bond Institute link will bring any of your audience to that site and to information about the conference. And if anyone's out there who wants to attend just as an attendee, there is still time, just maybe about another week or 10 days or so, to register, apply for a letter of invitation, and secure a visa all in time to make it over there for the conference.
Okay.
But it promises to be pretty amazing, and we'll be meeting with people from all over the world, talking story about transformation and how to take that energy of war and conflict, and to, at least our part of the program is to help turn it around to harmony, which I'm presenting as our natural state. And that's really why I got interested in this at all, was to say, by the time we get to conflict resolution and by the time we talk about the consciousness of peace, we've already left our first base, our natural state, which is a state of harmony. So I wrote to them about this approach, and they were very interested, and so we're going. So we could also use additional support, for sure. It's a pretty extensive chunk of change. We're looking at generating about $60,000 to cover our group for the period of time that it'll take to get there, and conference fees and travel and everything, and
if people,
gifts to the people.
If people want to help out, how can they do that?
They could go to planetpuna.com and go to our PayPal place there and mark down, you know, whatever contribution they would want to make.
Okay.
Any bit would help. We're going to bring bumper stickers that say, just say yes to domestic harmony, and I'll be getting them printed up in different languages so we can distribute them. And just to spread the idea that harmony is here, it's real, it's very empowering, people have a say in the matter, and we can take back that territory in our own selves, as well as help change the world, one person at a time, but that happens pretty quickly, as we're seeing.
All right, well, look, let me thank you for spending a few minutes here. We'll get you guys back on the air after your conference, and you can give us an update and let us know exactly what happened and share some of the information with the people on the radio that couldn't actually attend.
Yeah, that's hard to miss it. Well, we're working on the technology end of it to get a blog going of that conference. So we're working on that, and then people could come to planetpuna.com regularly, and we'll let you know so you can make an announcement.
All right.
And they can catch up on what we're doing there. And something that's exciting that's in the works now, too, is we're wanting to link up with the Exopolitics conference that's happening here in Kona through Michael Sala, and have them link up with us so we can have our people exchange dialogue about, you know, harmony with the ETs as well. And then from there, we have a grand plan to make our way over to Anchorage, Alaska, to meet up with the people at the International Whaling Commission meeting, which is being held throughout the month of May. And our intention is to make it there and either somehow get into the conference and talk story with people, just hold a press conference where we'll be beaming in live whale songs and dolphin songs from different places on the planet, whoever's got live material going on right then, and at least have an opportunity for the people of the sea, the dolphins and the whales, to come in and share something and talk story, even if we've yet to be able to understand it.
Wow, that's wonderful.
At least we'll be able to have their voice there.
All right, I'm all for it.
Work on that for a future thing. So lots is happening in May. Thank you for the opportunity to share this with our audience.
Sure, no problem.
Thank you always.
How's Michael doing?
How is what?
How's Michael?
He's great. He just finished a major paper with Nassim Hadamin of the Resonance Project and Dr. Elizabeth Rauscher as well, and they have so many exciting things to talk about. So if you want to, he's available now, and you can talk story about it. Yeah.
Well, tell Michael that I love him, but we're going to cut it quick here.
Okay.
And I'll talk to you guys off the air, but we'll get back on the air sometime in the next couple months for sure when you guys get back, okay?
Okay, yeah, because we have to talk about the Navy, too.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
And our wonderful outcome with our visit to Barking Sands last month.
All right, well, we'll leave the people hanging with that one, okay?
Oh, yes, let's do that, Michael. Thank you.
Star, you're
Aloha.
Wonderful. Aloha. Take care of yourself, all right?
You too, yes.
All right, everybody, that's Star Newland. Want to find information about Star and Michael Heisen, the work they're doing, www.planetpuna.com. And everything they're doing, I fully support. And I love everyone that they're involved with over there. So, anyway, and I wish I could go to Russia and hang out with them for a while. It'd be awesome. And if you can help them out, you know, it's great. And if you can go, go. I mean, it'll be a remarkable experience for sure. All right, let's see. Got to play another song here. Noah Earle. This one is called and this one is for Star, Better by Degrees. It's Mike, you listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM.
Bought a book of stamps and a little pad of paper, so I could write some letters to people I once knew. But I was out of practice writing my life story, and they were not exactly the people I once knew. So all I wrote was thank you and I apologize for anything I did to darken your sky. Brighter days gone by than these, but I can feel things getting better by degrees. Better by degrees, better by degrees. Used to be a crack shot with a bow and arrow, and I could hit a bullseye drawn on my bedroom wall. But the holes in my wall, I knew where they came from, and the holes in my shoes, barely notice it all. Now the holes are in my memory and my gas tank. I'm on the road, but I don't remember who to thank. Brighter days gone by than these, but I can feel things getting better by degrees. Better by degrees, better by degrees. It was a big old family, four generations. We could fill the house up every holiday. Grandma and grandpa went the way of nature. Now it's just us screw-ups and our screwed-up kids. Ain't no sense in getting all self-indulgent. Ain't no telling where all the money went. Brighter days gone by than these, but I can feel things getting better by degrees. Better by degrees. I used to have a good friend, I guess we had some benefits. I called her Susie Cream Cheese, she called me every Sunday night. I'd say, Susie, I miss you, why don't you come on over? She'd say, I don't want to, but I think I might. But these days I don't drink so damn much tequila. Show my love like it's a tricked out old Chevy Nova. Brighter days gone by than these, but I can feel things getting better by degrees. Better by degrees, better by degrees. Better by degrees, better by degrees.
Better by degrees, that's Noah Earle from Postcards from Home. Wonderful stuff, and it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. I'm feeling better by degrees myself, Noah. And I thank you for it. All right, everybody, hello. We got about 8 minutes before the midnight hour. Still the 9th of April, moving in on the 10th, 2007. And it's a pleasure to be with y'all. Can't wait to talk to my good friend Kent Stedman in just a few minutes here. But there was one thing I wanted to mention that I forgot to when I was talking about some of these other announcements and stuff. But I want to say thank you, and also it was a thrill for me yesterday. there is a gentleman whose name is Henrik Palmgren, and Henrik runs a website, multimedia website, I guess is the best way to describe it in a few words, called Red Ice Creations, redicecreations.com. And I've known Henrik for a few years. He's a musician. I've played some of his stuff on this program. But anyway, he does radio as well and has an amazing website. I mean, if you check out Red Ice Creations, just amazing, doing all kinds of cool stuff with radio, news, all kinds of archived historical information and independent stories, links to all kinds of different interesting places, and it is really quite a thing that that Henrik and whoever his partners are, I don't know if he's doing it by himself or not. I sent him an email asking, are you doing this all by yourself? You have help with it, because he's doing, there's quite a bit happening over there. But anyway, he's in Sweden, I think on the western coast of Sweden. And at any rate, you know, like I say, we've been friends. And about a month or two ago, he sent me a note and said, "Hey, I'd like to actually interview you on Red Ice Radio." And I thought, wow, that was cool. And you know, I'm always doing the interviewing, and I thought that it was, you know, might be fun to talk with Henrik, and you know, a chance to sort of give my take on stuff. And anyway, I did that yesterday with him, and I thank him for the opportunity. And we recorded, I don't know, an hour and a half, something like that, yesterday. And it was great fun for me. I have no idea how it will come across, but it was as candid as you can imagine. You know, the FCC rules and this sort of thing don't apply, and you know, I did not recognize any restrictions on language, and I spoke, you know, pretty frankly, and you know, maybe with emotion at time or whatever. But anyway, I had a great experience, and I hope, you know, I hope it's relatively well received. Knowing me, it'll probably be the last interview I ever do, but at least I did the one, and I did it with my heart. I tell you guys, I just totally did it with my heart, and I don't know what, you know. I think back and I go, well, I can remember maybe 5 or 10 minutes of the stuff that I was talking about, but we talked for a long time. And trust me, Henrik didn't say much. So I don't know what the hell I said. But anyway, we'll find out soon enough. That's going to be on the web on Thursday on redicecreations.com. So check out Henrik's site one way or the other. But, you know, if you want to listen to that interview that he did with me, it'll be on the web in a few days. And I don't know if it's going to be like a, you know, like watching a car accident or something better than that, hopefully. But at any rate, it was cool, and I thank Henrik for the opportunity to do it. And one way or the other, check out his site. He's doing great stuff over there, okay? All right, let's see. In the news, there's only one thing. There's a lot of stuff in the news, but I've only got a couple minutes here, and I want to get Kent on the air with us here. But there are a few things, and this one in particular, there's an interesting story here on the forum that was posted. And thanks to Ian for this, but the title of the story says, Antidepressants Found in Soil. Soil bacteria work in a similar way to antidepressants. UK scientists suggest that a type of friendly bacteria found in soil may affect the brain in a similar way to antidepressants. Their findings are published in the early online edition of the journal Neuroscience. Researchers from Bristol University and the University College of London discovered using laboratory mice that a friendly bacteria commonly found in soil activated brain cells to produce the brain chemical serotonin and altered the mice's behavior in a similar way to antidepressants. They are suggesting that this could explain why immune system imbalance could make some people vulnerable to mood disorders like depression. Anyway, the story goes on. But, yeah, you know, go out and get your hands in the dirt. It's springtime. Plant something, grow something, you know, and it will do you good. And now the scientists are finally, you know, and certainly very carefully, you know, beginning to tread and talk about things that, you know, the herbalists have known for 5,000 years. Yes, the earth is good. The earth will help you. Get your hands in the soil, right? You don't need to take Prozac. The reason people are depressed is because they never go outside and see the light of day. Their feet never curl in the ground, in the mud. You know, get naked, roll in it. Love it. It's your mother. All right? She loves you. She'll show you. But you got to show her, too. All right. Antidepressants found in the soil and other places. You know, lots of things grow from the soil. Lots of antidepressants. Some grow from crapola. Some grow from dung. Some of my favorites. On the other hand, this is probably a good reason for the pharmaceutical vultures to lobby for the criminalization of dirt. Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's make the entire earth illegal. How about that? Huh? I bet you our little spineless jellyfish in Congress wouldn't want to impede capitalism and progress. So let's do it. Jump on the bandwagon now. Let's make the entire earth illegal. All right, sarcasm off. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. We'll be back in just a minute with the man himself, Kent Stedman, the wizard, from cyberspaceorbit.com. It's Mike. It's Radio Orbit. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to Radio Orbit with Mike Hagen on KOPN 89.5 FM.
Alright, everybody, it's straight up midnight. Now, the 10th of April, 2007. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit. It is a pleasure to welcome, as always, to the program my good friend and mentor and the wonderful wizard behind cyberspaceorbit.com. If you're not familiar with Kent, you should be. And if you listen to this program frequently, you already are. So we will say hello and welcome Kent Stedman. Hi, buddy.
Howdy.
How
are me.
It is.
I think.
I hope.
So you had to do an interview too, huh?
Yeah. I did it yesterday for the first time on Easter. It was quite something.
So can I cuss too?
Dude, I cussed it up, man. You wait till you hear this thing. But it was really fun. I had a blast, and Henrik's real cool too, so.
I'll use some terms out of the Jabberwocky.
Oh, man. Yeah, let's just make up our own cuss words.
Crabjus Day.
Well, what have you been up to? You haven't been on the air for a while, so do a quickie. Who are you?
Who am I?
Yeah.
I'm an old coot. Runs a website. And, of course, old coots have all kinds of weird life experiences. If we're short on them, we make them up as we go. And I just got my hair cut and my beard trimmed. I have my a blue shirt with a rainbow color suspenders, so I'm dressed for this occasion.
Did you see my old coot photo that I put up on the website?
No.
go to my site.
Okay.
Anyway, Kent is an amazing guy, and he's an artist, and he's an amateur historian. And I say that only because he doesn't publish, because no one would ever publish what he has to write. And he has life experience that is beyond anyone that's still breathing that I know. And so he's a super important person in my life, and he teaches me stuff all the time. And every time we have a chance to bring him on the air, I hope that he shares some of his stuff with you guys. So we will do it again tonight, and I don't care where we start, Kent. What do you want to talk about? What's happening in your world?
Well, ask me a question. That was a question, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm just I'm home alone because Wendy went off to assist her mother in Florida. So I've been holding long conversations with the stucco print on my wall here. I'm kind of a hermit. The last decade, I've been sort of hiding out here. Don't know why.
You've been busy, though.
Yeah. Well, my form of meditation, everybody says meditate. But my form of meditation is to perch myself in front of my computer console and take off. That way I don't have to go out in some weird place and sit down and try to meditate with my teeth clenched. But, yeah, I was a, as far as my resume, I was a, what was I? I was once a college professor and a farmer and a musician. Tried being a biker for once, but that ended in disaster.
I know you crashed.
I crashed.
All right, let's do it. We got to tell it. You got to tell this, tell your biker story about the Hell's Angel bit and when you crashed on that motorcycle.
Well, yeah. See, the Hell's Angels, I was teaching a class in a big lecture hall. And the old Hell's Angels, some of them were right there with Sonny at the initiation of the awesome institution.
And this is in Fresno, right?
Yeah, but they all showed up and sat on the front row because they'd just gotten out of their ringleader, let me put it that way, just got out of San Quentin, and he decided he wanted to become educated. So I wasn't too long that I had to find out how these guys ticked, so I started hanging around with them. And I was a musician, so I was their pet minstrel, more or less. We rode in an exhibit in the Clovis Day Parade in Clovis cow country, east of Fresno, in the back of the ringleader's Model A pick-em-up truck. And trouble was, you know, those old Model A's have a throttle in them. And what he did is he saw a pretty girl walking down the side in a crowded, you know, the typical parade crowd.
What do you mean a throttle?
You just set the throttle and a...
You mean not a gas pedal?
Yeah. So he set the throttle and got out. And that old Model A started going its own direction. The crowd started running, screaming. Anyway, we fixed that. I broke my guitar trying to crawl over the front seat and push that throttle in. But as time went by, one of them said, well, I ought to get a bike, so couldn't afford a Harley, so I got a Honda 305, but it was cool. It had extended forks, painted green, and I raced around Fresno illegally for a while trying to get my expertise going, and then I said, I'm going to Yosemite. I'm ready. So me and another guy went to Yosemite, and I was pacing sort of behind him. And on the way back, we went down through Mariposa and circled around to a little road called Triangle Road, a windy, snaky road that plunked us back in the main highway, of course, the main highway up to Yosemite and connecting Fresno. Well, anyway, he went around a curve. I went around. I tracked around the curve, and I hit the shoulder. Yeehaw! That was the end of that. But it was a cosmic experience. Everything is a cosmic experience.
Yeah, that was just one that was like, you know, sort of like one of the louder ones.
Yeah. Well, I saw my life flash in front of my eyes. That's cool. For all of those that have never experienced it, well, you should. So buy yourself a Honda 305 with extended forks.
Paint them green.
Yeah. And it's amazing. Things start slowing down. Here you are going on 62 2 feet per second per second over the edge of a 100-foot drop, really. And things get real slow, and which is good, because that allowed me to compensate my trajectory so as to miss a couple of big boulders.
Oh, my God.
And then it all just sort of, the tape snapped.
What do you mean?
Interesting. The tape snapped. The matrix went poof.
Mm.
And I saw my whole life. So I had a near-death experience. But, you know, you don't see it sequentially. You see it like a bunch of frames overlapped. Take a film and cut it up into sections and stack them all up. That's how you see it. See through all the frames. Then I went plunk, ended up in the Mariposa Hospital.
How badly were you hurt?
Well, I thought I broke my back because I couldn't sit up, but it turned out I just sprained it real bad. See? But I could have died and went back to Fresno or something like that. So, like you say, now at my age, I'm amazed I'm still here. But on the other hand, like you said a few minutes ago, I heard you. You never know when your last interview will be, or your last sentence.
Right, I did that interview as if I was going to die today. You know, I did it yesterday. And I thought, okay, I'm going to do it as if I got nothing to lose. You know.
And I'm an old time music picker. I mentioned that because a lot of people that I used to pick music with are now sort of in sorry shape. I'm sad to report that Kenny Hall's going in and out of the hospital now.
Oh, man, I was thinking about Kenny today. Of course, I always think about him whenever I talk to you, you know.
And John Adams, remember him?
Sure, the guitar player.
Guitar picker.
Yeah.
He's probably the country's greatest minstrel.
Oh, man, yeah.
He's in surgery for something or other. I don't know what.
Oh, boy.
John saved my life once.
How so?
Well, I was all screwed up, basically from the 60s, you know. And I was having some really bad hallucinations and apparitions that were appearing in my life from wherever, Spiritus Mundi. And he said, I called him out, what do I do? What do I do? Because John has a sort of amazing, he's like a yogi, amazing take on things. He says, well, next time you have a shrouded apparition and approach you, ask him what its name is. So I did. Found out the name and went away.
And
does
you,
that make any sense?
Yes, it does, of course. You know, I mean, there's the whole, well, I mean, there's a lot of things, but, you know, language and words are important. When you can speak, you know, the true name of something, it is said that you have power over it, or at least can recognize it for what it is, you know?
I won't mention the name because it's bad luck.
I know what it is. You've told me before. You don't have
but
to say it.
If you look in the Book of Enoch, look under Watchers.
Yeah, the Book of Enoch, again, one of these apocryphal texts that the biblical scholars, you know, say aren't legitimate, but they're, you know, part of the bibliography of the Book of Genesis. In other words, you know, there were earlier books that have been oftentimes scrapped from the historical record, and the Book of Enoch is one of these. So the Watchers, yeah, they're some sort of angelic beings, and they're not all bad, I don't think. But what do you make of that whole business, Ken?
I'm thinking. Well, my beliefs on this keep changing. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
I wear my beliefs day by day, and see what happens next. A lot of these things, like entities and UFOs, the old pagan spirits of nature, I think that there's a veil that surrounds this holographic world we live in and another world, and there are reasons where the veils get thin, and then you have an experience when something when you're able to see through, or something comes through from probably an adjacent world, and then you have a, or I had a have a tendency to organize it in terms of my already pre-established belief system.
Yeah, I think we all do. Yeah,
and that goes for UFOs, and it goes for things on Earth that can't totally be explained in terms of our own cultural awareness. I'm going to launch a report here pretty soon. I haven't yet. I'm waiting a final edit. But a guy's been trekking around China, and he sent me a report. And he's recently been investigating, tromping around the tomb and the warriors of the first emperor of China, whose name I can't pronounce. So we'll call him Joe. But, you know, we look at the great pyramids of Egypt and Peru.
Yeah, and Mexico.
And Mexico and Guatemala.
Right, right.
I think China has its beat. I've seen aerial photographs of China of some amazing array of pyramids, like 50 of them, northern China.
Yeah, didn't they like take them off? I mean, in other words, didn't they were, I know there was a whole big story that you covered, I don't know, a few years ago, and we talked about it a lot, and they sort of were taken off the menu for research, though, weren't they sort of closed off by the government officials?
Well, apparently, they just so happened to build a lot of their military bases up there, top secret research centers and missile silos and things like that. But we do have the tomb of the great emperor of China, and that's one of the few unexcavated mounds or pyramids in the world, and apparently there's some kind of taboo about going in there, because the first emperor of China, who built the Great Wall, and then he built those thousands of terracotta warriors and a huge mausoleum, pyramidal mausoleum, and inside of it he's allegedly reproduced the entire world, including stars overhead, which are precious gems, and a lake of mercury.
Yeah, I remember reading stories about an underground river or lake of like obsidian fluid and mercuric something, yeah.
And it's amazing to me that some rogue hasn't already tried to enter that.
Well, it's, I mean, this is like, you know, Indiana Jones stuff, you know. But, I mean, that stuff's real.
Yeah, it's real. Well, we don't know for sure what's inside of it, because nobody will go in. They won't bet anybody.
But we know that there are places that have been actually discovered and have turned out to be absolutely outrageous. I mean, right along the lines of this. I mean, it's not without precedent.
But turning the full circle here, what I meant to say is, how the hell did they build these things, you know? The guy only lived at about age 48. In the process, he built the Great Wall of China and this impossible tomb and all those terracotta warriors.
And the pyramids, you guys, the one in particular that is a gigantic pyramid. And this complex is just gigantic. And then underground, underneath the pyramidal complex, is where all of this other stuff is supposed to be going on. So it's like it's a huge architectural project above the ground, but also similarly below the ground, right, Ken?
Right.
Holy cow!
And there are rumors. See, a guy, a pilot, flew over northern China back during World War II and saw below him what he said is the greatest artificial structure on the planet. He called it the White Pyramid. Now, that's still a mystery. They haven't, they're not sure what that is. They call the Emperor's Tomb the White Pyramid, but that's not the White Pyramid. It's just a quick solution.
Mm.
semantic solution. There is something out there called the White Pyramid. I'm going to do some...
What, they're like supposed to be lost in the jungle or something, or what?
I don't know. Well, it's lost in a remote region. Mm-hmm. A lot of places on this earth nobody's...
It's true.
...comped over.
Yeah.
In fact, most of the earth, I'd say.
Well, certainly, I mean, there's 70% of it's water.
We live in cities, and we think, well, that's it. But I'll tell you, you know, flying out of Seattle here in either direction, most of what's down there is uninhabited. You wouldn't know anybody was on Earth.
Mm.
Even flying across the country, most of that down there is uninhabited.
Dude, this country's so big. I mean, there's so much that's uninhabited. Where I live, I mean, I'm 10 miles outside of a relatively, you know, I'm 10 miles outside of a little city that's 100,000 people. And where I live is the middle of nowhere. I mean, if people came to my house and didn't know where they were, you know what I mean? They'd be like, oh man, we're in the middle of nowhere. I like it that way, but it's weird. I mean, there's a lot of space that's not being taken up.
Several years ago, a guy told me about a mound out there somewhere, the Mystery Mound, he called it, in Missouri.
Oh, man, there's all kinds of terraforms here.
He was the first person ever to find it. And he's kept the location somewhat obscure and hidden so people don't go tear it up.
You sent me an email from him years ago, I think, and I wish I knew who he was. I'd love to talk to him.
I don't have the details in front of me, but I'll dig them up and send them to you.
Do so if you can remember, if you can find it, because I remember, this area right here, this is Plains Indians area, among other things, right? And the mounds and the terraforms around here are profound. They're everywhere, Ken. It's just people don't recognize that they're in front of their face.
Who did that? See, and how did they do it? You look at one pyramid and you go, golly gee, that's impossible. But then you look at a map of a large territory, like the eastern United States, mid-eastern to eastern United States, and there are probably several hundred thousand mounds that were built there. There were 20,000 mounds in one state alone, I can't remember.
In Wisconsin?
Yeah.
I mean, that's in the mid. I mean, that's just north. I mean, it's north of here, significantly north. But yeah, I mean, and the thing is, there's this guy I'm going to talk to in a few weeks. His name's Gary David. He wrote a book called Orion and the Hopi. But anyway, he's another one of these guys that's making remarkable correlations between, you know, what's happening on the ground and what's happening up there in the sky. My intuition is that these mounds are not randomly placed, and that if the bigger your lens is, the wider you open your view, you'll find that what they are star patterns and star charts.
That's definitely true. These hundreds of thousands of mounds in the United States are shaped under the constellation Orion. It's really blatant. When you look at the map, I've got a map somewhere on my site. You look at it, well, that's Orion.
Mm-hmm.
You there?
Yes, I'm here, yeah.
I heard a strange click.
Yeah, I heard a click, too. Yeah, but...
And the mounds of the Great Cairns in Boyne Valley are situated under the constellation of the Pleiades.
In Ireland?
Yeah.
That's another remarkable place.
Yeah.
With history that is just now becoming even reasonably well understood.
And the Cairns in Ireland... Newgrange, Nowth and Douth and Ilocterra, they predate the Egyptian pyramids by at least 1,000 years.
And again, these are remarkable structures.
But how did they do it? You know, I'm beginning to think, like, I'm really interested in the nano world because we have a tendency to think here in our culture that when you build big stuff, you got to have big equipment, you know, and carve out big blocks of whatever and do that. But I'm wondering if those old wizards back then didn't have another approach to it. And I'm very interested in the
small,
what's down, within our surface reality. Mm. And perhaps there are tiny, tiny little things that can somehow be organized to carry out certain tasks and so on. Do you hear a click again?
No, but I'm thinking, and yeah, I mean, I whenever I think about this, I always think about Grandfather Wallace, you know, and about he talked about these technologies that existed, but that were different, you know. Wallace always talked about technology as we know it, you know, machinery essentially, was only an aping of the real technology. In other words, what we were trying to do with machines and transistors and this and that was only an approximation of what the ancestors were able to do with what he called, you know, real technology, but he always related it to spirit, and he related everything to spirit, which more and more I do too. And I mean, he basically said that, you know, the laws of physics as we know them are not as firm as we might believe, and there are ways to circumvent them.
Well, in a sense, our technology, to start with, at its basis is a thought, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then somewhere along the line, they try to organize, harness, toss a lasso around the electron, and whatever the electron is.
Yeah.
The electron might not be a thing, and from the electron, they organize what they call electricity. And thus, controlling the electron, which I'm not sure anybody really knows what it is. I'm not even sure they know what electricity is.
Right.
But that's very tiny, tiny nano world.
Uh-huh.
And from that, you know, we make machines. And
yeah.
The basis of our whole.
Everything. It's the basis of everything we do, yeah.
And the electron, as we mentioned before on this show, the electron comes from the root L.
Yeah, one of the L words.
The L world, and the L was the sort of the great everything and nothing to the ancient Hebrew scholars and Semitic people.
And let's talk about some of the words that are associated with that.
Well, you get the scientific words like element.
Mm.
Electron.
Electricity.
Then you get the mythological sort of concepts come in with angel, Elohim.
Elohim, yeah. Then we have elect and elevate. And,
L.
You know, and then letter L is another one of the letter L itself, this right angle, has something to do with the whole business, because there's something to do with the word, the relationship between the word angel and the word angle, you know, and again it has to do with light refraction or something, but all of these things are so strangely interconnected, but somehow they are, for sure. There's this guy, I'm going to take a little turn here real fast, but you remind me of this guy, Bill Donahue, and I'm dying to get this guy on the show. I've been asking him as long as I've been doing the show, and he just doesn't want to do it. But anyway, he pointed out to me years ago, long before I was doing radio, a lot of interesting things about a lot of ancient writings, different texts, you know, different historical and mythological texts. And with regard to the Christian Bible, you know, he pointed out to me that in Numbers, the book of the Bible called Numbers, I forget exactly what the chapter and verse is, but it's right toward the beginning of the book, but there is a reference to all the different tribes of Israel, right? And in the midst of this, he talks, it is written about the tribe of Judah, and that Judah is a tribe that is stationed in the east at the point of the rising sun, and that they are considered the children of light, right? And guess how many people are in the tribe of Judah? 186,400. This is the speed of light in a vacuum. 186,400 miles per hour. Now, it's so strange that, to me, that's not a coincidence. And the fact that it's related in English measurement, you know what I mean? I mean, it's just a remarkable thing. And there's all kinds of these things in the Bible that he points out and all these other different books. But anyway, I've always thought that there are somehow hidden messages that are encrypted and encoded into many of these old writings, and you can read them and be uninitiated and not understand, you know, or you could understand at a certain level but miss out on another level of it. Have you ever considered that sort of thing?
Yeah, I did some seat of the pants research several years ago where I was looking at the ancient Greek alphabet, and I began to wonder if they organized some of their technology around some of their symbols in their alphabet, their letters. For instance, phi, you know, P-H-I,
mm-hmm.
which represents a power source, really, when you look at the mathematics and geometry. Beyond it, it's the golden ratio.
Mm-hmm. The gold section, the golden mean.
Yeah. And which I think is a force, which I think they meant, here's the way I went, phi, the golden ratio, sort of an underlying sine wave between the energies and the golden ratio, which is a kind of a buzz going on, like a force.
Mm-hmm.
And then organizing it, and I looked at the Ark of the Covenant, which is a sort of a re-representation of the letter phi. It has the curved wings and so on. And then I looked at some other symbols, like what are the symbols that I look at? Pi, the pi device, possible energy accumulator, as we see. Pi is seems to be represented in the great trilithons of Stonehenge, you know.
What about
Psi, Delta, Theta?
What about the one that looks like it's used as a symbol for resistance, Ohm? Is it Omega? Is that what it is?
Yeah, I'd have to look at that, the Omega device. That's a... See, our former wizard Hans.
I knew you were going to bring up Hans, because he, okay, go on, please.
He took the Omega concept and made a possible wave generator from it, or identified a wave generator.
What does that mean?
Well, it means it's a gizmo that blasts out waves. That's my ordinary thing. I don't have Hans around anymore.
What kind of waves, though? Any kind of waves you want?
Omega waves. It's a sort of a disc. And the Omega symbol is like a disc with feet.
Yes.
And I'm going to click on it and see if I can pull up Hans.
Man, oh man, for people, while Kent's doing this, you know, a hat's off and a huge toast and a prayer and a big sigh for Hans Hendrik Russell, this amazing, amazing man that shared so much with lucky people like myself and Kent and anybody else who was paying attention when he was around. He was outrageous, Kent.
Yeah, Hans said, "I just received, this is concerning the Omega device." says, I just received a special storage analyzing oscilloscope, whatever the heck that is. Using my UFO sensing equipment, I have found that there is a frequency being broadcast probably worldwide, if my fears are correct. The frequency is sitting extremely stable at 14.2-something kilohertz. It has a persistent modulated wave shape based around the omega concept. The relative waveform does not change much, although the whole pattern throbs slightly. This is within the higher range of human hearing. Being on or active continuously, it would cause a counter reaction in the brain.
Great.
On. Now, that's what my friend and I, Billy Mercer, we one time took the Fibonacci series, which is the underlying frequency
of phi, right?
Of phi, and we took each integer. And then divided the prior integer to the higher integer. It's a string of integers, 1, 1, 3, 5, 8.
Mm-hmm.
And then we take the result and we plotted it. And each one of these divisions, which is what a ratio is, achieves a number that goes slightly above and below. 1.618. And then we plotted it, and it's a diminishing sine wave.
So it's a fluctuating wave over and above 1.618 that tightens over time.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
And so then I, not being a great electronics guy, I did ask around if it were possible to build a wave generator based on phi. And I did get some positive replies on that. In fact, as far as I know, there are guys that went out and did this.
And that's what Hans, I think, was doing, right?
Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was sort of typical of the work he was doing.
No, he was, and that was just the tip of the iceberg, my God.
And I'm wondering if you broadcast the phi frequency electronically, what would happen?
I don't know.
Now, the Omega device reminds me, the Omega symbol, the Greek symbol, and the device that Hans is working with almost looks like a when you watch the TV series Stargate. Looks like a Stargate.
Hmm. Interesting. All right, look, let's take a break, all right?
Yeah.
All right, everybody, it's Mike, and I'm with Kent Stedman. If you want to find out information about this amazing fella, you can do it on the web at www.cyberspaceorbit.com. CYBERSPACEorbit.com, and you can link there from my site always. Anyway, Kent's an amazing guy, and we'll have him back in just a few minutes. In the meantime, we'll play another song here from my good friend Noah Earl. And what are we going to play here? I think this is called Lighting Fireworks. Speaking of Stargates, we'll do it here. Noah Earl from Postcards from Home. Great stuff. And back in just a minute with Kent Stedman. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia.
Lighting fireworks in the street, watching them spin around. That's what the 4th of July is like in this little town. Knocking back a Keystone Light and getting in a fight in the middle of the road. Neighborhood Improvement Association has a ball. Somebody gets a slap on the wrist in one phone call. Like a flock of geese, but they roll toward the rising sun. Watching the funnel clouds form is our idea of fun. Watching the river rise right before our eyes and jumping on in. Everybody needs a little adventure.
pressure in their lives. That's why we always carry around our boy guns. Jose walks down the street dangling three channel cats. Daddy's working on his truck, swearing that the flies and gnats. Mom's making cheeseburger pie, my brother pokes me in the eye, so I kick him in the nuts. We go upstairs to sulk and listen to our favorite band. But then we make up and go light fireworks in our hands. Curtis got promoted last week down at the quick shop. Now he can marry his girl and all our fun can stop. How are we supposed to get drunk? That big old punk's got a wife and kids. Guess we'll have to wait until we both turn 21. Until then, let's go shoot shit up Grandpa's old shotgun.
Noah Earl from Postcards from Home. And it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. On the web, kopn.org, and streaming live. Also on cosmicwavesradio.com. So, all right, it's Mike, and we've got Kent Stedman with us from cyberspaceorbit.com. We'll say hello again. Hi, Kent.
Well, we were talking about waveforms and this and that. You want to hear a tune I wrote one time?
I do.
Based on Psi. I don't even remember how the heck I did it. I would sort of just went into a two-day focused trance, and I used Cool Edit, and the principles within the golden ratio, and Cool Edit allows you to see the waveform as well as
shape it
mathematically. And I didn't make a wave generator electronic, but I made a sound wave. Let's see if it still works. Can hear my great tune that I wrote. Wait a minute. Requires a plug-in.
Yeah. When did you do this?
I don't remember.
Long time ago or no? When Hans was still around?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I think you put me up to it.
Wow, this is worth listening to then. Not that anything else wouldn't be, Kent.
It's not going. So while I'm trying to make it work, seeing row, row, row your boat or something.
Yeah, I will.
There it is.
You got it? You're lucky. I was just about to start singing.
It isn't working.
Oh, man.
Oh, wait a minute. Run ActiveX control.
Oh, I don't like the sound of that.
There it goes.
Whoa.
Does it come through?
Yeah. Sounds like a UFO.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just pulsating.
And the reason that intrigued me is I'm an experiencer, a UFO experiencer. But I'll tell you what, I've always thought as these experiences evolved that they were always prefaced, and I've talked about this before, by a buzz.
Mm. Man, that's the same as the out-of-body thing.
And then, subsequent to the buzz, you see the UFO. So like Jacques Vallée and the others, I wonder if it's sort of a thing that materializes as a result of an electromagnetic pulse.
Mm.
And when I heard my tune that I made, when I first turned it on, I went, wow, that's it.
Mm.
As expressed in sound, you see. Now, the buzz that I experienced wasn't a sound thing. It was just, unless I was a tuning fork, because the whole sound went through my whole body.
Right.
and that increased in cadence until it just tossed me right flat down. I couldn't move.
You want to tell that story?
Again?
I don't know that you probably have on the air, but I don't know. You can always elaborate on it. I mean, we've been talking about it lately. I have this thread that's up on the forum right now that's called Call Down the Saucers.
Yeah.
And we've been talking a lot lately about what they are and what's going on. And I recognize it could be more than one thing, but on one hand, there is a sort of intuition that there's somehow a denizen of the psyche or an archetype of the unconscious like Jung would have talked about, and that it's possible that they may be able to express themselves in physical 3D reality at the same time and actually be real.
Well, yeah, but like what Hans says, what I'm thinking from my own experiences is that the human brain somehow gets into a resonant situation with a force.
Mm.
Hans says the omega force is being broadcast steadily.
Right, at that
particular frequency. As perceived in hearing, actually. And does this frequency, this waveform, summon up from the brain certain latent abilities? And do things materialize then to the five senses, things that normally do not, including, you know, UFOs, entities, pixies, whatever your belief system is able to accommodate.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But anyway, what happened to me is, I was a weird kid, and as a weird kid I had UFO experiences, but the way it peaked out to me, that is, I saw lights in the sky, or I think I did. And the way it peaked out to me when I was in college, I was going through a passage and having a difficult time with it. So I just, all of a sudden, one night, spontaneously grabbed a bedroll and headed up to a place called Hughes Canyon up in the Wasatch Range east of where I grew up.
In Utah, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a waterfall up there. And if you go to the bottom of my website, cyberspaceorbit.com, down at the foot of the page you'll see a link to the UFO experience, it says. And so I've, with graphics and words, I've spelled it out a little more distinctly.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened to me is after the third day up there, one night it was cold up there and I had to put all these stones around me, heat up rocks in a fire and put them around me to stay alive. But while I was there, this energy thing started to happen. And I call it Woomba, because it began to build Woomba, 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 until it just literally knocked me flat, and I thought that I was going to die or worse, you know? Felt like I might just decompose into molecules or something. But at the point where I was threatened with non-existence, it seems like something inside my own spirit pushed it away, and then it went away. But over the years then, that was the beginning of something, because that experience kept coming back to me and back to me and back to me in my early, in my adult years. And eventually led to an out-of-body experience. But each time it happened, it seemed like it was more tolerable. But that is, it went from a really frightful thing where I thought I was going to perish to it got easier and easier and easier to withstand until I almost looked for it and it became pleasurable.
Mm.
And when it became pleasurable, one afternoon in my farm in Sanger, California, I popped right out of my body.
Where'd you go?
Well, I went. It happened twice. It was a repeat experience, as though whatever the reason for it, I needed to do it twice so I'd believe it. And the first time I went out into what I'd call the astral world, where I was floating around in familiar territory, but it was slightly changing. All the colors were more brilliant and things were more alive and you could you were in an interface with everything mm-hmm. in the natural world.
Mm-hmm.
It was like they were things, but they were also, there was the thread of thought everywhere, you know, connecting everything to everything.
Right.
It's like really being inside the mother for awake, you know, inside mm-hmm. the mother. And the laws were less complicated there. You could do things that you're prohibited from doing in the 3D world. I think it's a parallel universe. For instance, you can go where you want by the will of thought, or you can levitate. And at that moment, I looked at the sun, and the sun was I had this instinct that, okay, this is cool, but I want to leap further. You know, I want to go into space.
Right.
Or into an even, I had the sense that there was an even more profound dimension available. And for some reason I looked at the sun and the sun was eclipsed, and I immediately got this thought form from the sun that it wasn't time yet to do that. So then I just sort of zipped off, and then it became kaleidoscopic, the images, but I had a sense of traveling a great distance, but still in orbit or near to the Earth. And then when I came back into my body, which was seated in an easy chair, I didn't have a sense of systematically flying back into my body. I was just boom, did back.
Like a snap back almost.
Snap back. And that was real interesting too, because my body felt so, so cumbersome. And it took me quite a while to get working again. I had to wiggle my fingers and my toes. It took like a good 30 minutes to where I could actually get up and walk around. Because I felt like I was really in clay, you know. And, well, anyway, it happened again exactly the same, from the exact same station. Of course, my rational mind later tried to find interpretations, and then there was always the doubt. That always happens, you know. You start doubting it. So it happened again, and I went out through the same thing, floating around in my backyard behind my farmhouse in Sanger. And the same question was produced by me almost involuntarily from this position now in this world, which is different than my 3D world, but it's cool, but is there something even better? And this time I went zoom. I guess it's okay. Now is the time. And I went zoom, and the last really rational brain symbol representation I can give you is that I felt like I was spread eagle moving up away from Earth, but I was spread eagle against a membrane. And as I pressed against this membrane, it gave way and allowed me to go into a whole other trip. And the only thing it was a plane of pure light, you know. And to go in there, I had to give up the sense of body, and my mind wouldn't go in there either, except for the initial transitional symbol of being in pure light. Then, when I snapped back into my body again, my rational brain again raced and raced and raced to try to find a symbolic relationship with what had just happened. And the deal is, it still is, because I don't know what happened. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't find symbols, mm-hmm. word symbols, to describe it any better, but it seemed like I was in that other place for an eternity, almost.
Do you think that it's a peak at a possible future, perhaps? I mean, I'm speculating here, but and I'm speculating because of my own experiences and my own feelings about things that have happened to me. But do you think that it's possible that, in other words, you know, we all talk about escaping the physical and the idea that the body is somehow as wonderful as the body is, and I think that it's important that we recognize and come to terms with our bodies and love them and embrace the whole physical thing. But there's also this, you know, this wanting for escape from gravity and from the bounds of the body. Do you think that this is an intimation of things to come, perhaps?
Well, I hope so.
Even at death, even if not something that we might experience in this realm, but maybe something that might be an after death sort of experience.
Yeah, I think I understand that I had a near death experience, which probably simulates death. In other words, I fully expect that when I finally give way to the other world, that's what it's going to be like. Mm-hmm. I fully expect that trajectory that I took then will be similar to the trajectory that I will take after life.
Do you think you get what you expect? You know what I mean?
Well, in a sense, yes. At one level, like I say, you can will your trajectory around with thought. That's what I call the first level, the first universe, beyond our 3D universe. And at that level, I think, yeah, you can just sort of trip around. And, like being in a lucid dream, you can just go where you want, do what you want to do, and materialize what you want to materialize. But it isn't, it's different than pure illusion, because that stuff really happens, you know. It becomes it becomes a reality.
What does it say about
But then to leap into that what I call the third world. Here's what I can say about that. I do think you disintegrate to go in there.
Hmm.
That's what people are all afraid of. You know, they'll be annihilated. But it's wonderful. And what can I say?
Mm-hmm.
It's a sense of universal presence, and it really felt like being home. In other words, I was not afraid. In either case, I was not afraid. But I understand that this took years and years and years of dealing with that doggone
mm-hmm.
pulsating force.
Mm-hmm.
Getting more and more used to it. It's kind of like having my molecules lined up or something. I don't know. And to where that happened, to where it was pleasurable and not frightening.
And Kent, when you were in that space, you still had a sense of self, though, too, right?
I don't know about the third world. Everything that I call myself ceased to exist, including thought, to go in there.
But to be able to relate it, you have to have
some. But I felt it was okay in the sense that I wasn't sacrificing anything to go in there.
Mm-hmm.
But rather it was a kind of fulfillment, you know. But at the same time, who I am now is not who I experienced myself to be in any shape or form when I was there. In fact, that's frustrating when I'm here now, because I can't repeat the experience willfully. I think the world kind of gives you up to it somehow.
Hmm.
You can't really do it. In fact, when I did it, I wasn't involved in any super cosmic procedure. I wasn't meditating. I wasn't doing anything. In fact, I was going through life kind of screwing up. That's what
right.
I was doing. But it beat me to a pulp.
Uh-huh.
And when I got beat to a pulp, I suddenly was surrendered in a state of surrender to the point where it allowed to happen.
Hmm.
But then I can't say, okay, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, surrender. I can't do that.
Right.
It's like the world yields you up rather than you are able to initiate the trip yourself.
Oh, man, I recognize something in what you said, because for me too, I think that when this stuff approaches, it does require, you know, it's weird because people talk about meditation and, focus and concentration. In other words, in order to try to achieve these particular things that we're talking about, people actually try to will it, you know what I mean? and they're always left wanting for the most part, unless they eat, you know, 5 or 6 grams of mushrooms or something. But to try to do it on the natch, to try to do it, you know, just without, you know, another species, you know, helping you along, people tend to try to focus on it and try to really work toward it. My experience is that, like you say, it requires a sort of unconsciousness. It requires a sort of keeping your eye off the ball and a sort of just easygoing thing where you're not even expecting it. And that's when the thing comes up and whacks you.
Well, you know, you go through stages of your life that are full of trial and tribulation, and you think, man, this really sucks. You know, but you can always kind of get a grasp on it through hindsight.
Mm, yeah, I mean,
it seems like those periods are really fiery conflict.
Oh yeah,
they sort of forge you into me into a position where stone cold sober, I had those experiences.
Mm-hmm. You
know? And in other words, life will sometimes beat the crap out of you on purpose, and mm-hmm. the purpose is to then
reform
and be able to yield to the point where something really incredible can happen.
Yeah.
So what St. John yeah. said about the dark night of the soul and how we're sometimes cast out on our own, you know, with no real distinct connection to our more sublime nature. That's, in hindsight, I can see that was all purposeful.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that, you know, it's the alchemical transformation. You know, it's the personal alchemy. And the alchemists talk about the negredo and the albedo. And what the alchemist longs for is exactly what you're talking about, the dark night of the soul. This is where the prima materia is found, and this is what the alchemist longs for, because this is the stuff that you start with, the stuff that you can transform. And what is it? It's flotsam. It's shit, essentially. You know, it's crap.
Well, I've been through a lot of different stages. I think I've always been propelled toward something beyond this world to try to understand, you know, trying many different things, including what I felt to be a good idea was the development of my own imagination, which was a systematic pursuit on my part. In other words, I always felt the imagination was key to it all.
It is.
So rather than shove it away, like we are sort of tricked into culturally into doing, and saying it was unreal, that it's all unreal, I cultivate it through the arts and through music, through philosophy.
All right, look, we're
and then I went through shamanic trips and all that.
Yeah,
but the ultimate trip was I wasn't doing anything.
Mm.
Okay.
All right, look, let's take a break, okay?
Okay.
All right, top of the hour, everybody. It's 1 a.m. now on the 10th of April, 2007. My good friend Kent Stedman with us from cyberspaceorbit.com. You can check him out on the web. And link there directly from my site always, but the URL is www.cyberspaceorbit, cyberspaceorbit.com. We'll be back with Kent in just a minute. Meantime, we'll play another song here from Noah Earle. And this one is called I Hope You're Awake. I think that's becoming more and more important. Back in a minute. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Kent Stedman with us. We'll be back with him in a few minutes. Hey, Kent.
Yeah.
Let's do space weather. I sort of neglected to talk about what's happening in the skies, knowing that you'd be with us. So let's talk.
That way I'll have to read my own notes. Okay.
Yeah, I figure. And all right?
Okay.
All right. Back in a minute, everyone. We'll do space weather. We'll talk about a bunch of other stuff with Kent over the next hour or so. And here's Noah Earle. One more time, this one's called I Hope You're Awake. It's Mike, you listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia.
Mm-hmm. can sleep through stormy weather, and I sleep like a baby at sea, and I dream but don't remember. I'm asleep when I don't want to be. When it comes to getting shut eye, now that I've been upended by you, I'm too busy weeping to do any sleeping, and I hope that you're awake now too. Well, it was autumn when I met you, and I was sleeping in a pile of fallen leaves. It's no wonder that you woke me, but it's the next part that no one believes. You went back to Pensacola, and I decided to follow you there. I traded my heart for Shinola, and you don't even give a care. In some big city, and I was plotting my conquest of the globe. I had left you home abandoned, just a sheer negligee and a robe. So I got nervous when I phoned you, and you called me by some other name. It's easy to see that you're through with old me, and I only have myself to blame. 'Cause I can sleep through stormy weather, and I sleep like a baby at sea, and I dream but don't remember. I'm asleep when I don't want to be. But when it comes to getting shut eye, now that I've been offended by you, I'm too busy weeping to do any sleeping, and I hope that you're awake now too. Tossing and turning, I hope that you're awake now too. Yearning and burning, I hope that you're fine too.
Hope you're awake now, too. That's Noah Earl, Postcards from Home, wonderful new stuff from an amazing young singer, songwriter, guitarist, and wearer of many musical hats, Noah Earl, my friend, and doing great stuff. Ken, what do you think of my friend Noah?
Ah, that's beautiful.
Good stuff.
I love that kind of music.
I knew it. That's why I
mean, I love all kinds of music. In my off hours, I listen to Mozart, you know, but just plain, simply spoken ballad, sort of backwoods ballad, yeah, really grabs you.
Yep, no doubt. Well, I'm glad you liked it, and I sort of was hoping that you would. So,
man, a single guitar and a like John. Hope John. Hope John's okay.
Me too. Me too. And yeah, he's been an amazing musician for a long, long time, and shared a whole lot of great music with so many different people. You know,
he's a wonderful man too. Really bright spirit and yogi. Western hippie yogi.
Yeah, well, we got one on the phone here with us as well, you guys. His name is Kent Stedman. And, Kent, what's happening up there in the skies above our heads?
Oh, whoops. Looking off my screen, Dave.
Come on, man, get with it. We got comets flying. We got all kinds of craziness around the sun.
Beings, I try to make things visible. You gotta go now, sit in front of your computer for better or worse, and go to cyberspaceorbit.com so you can see the pictures. Now, there's a lot of stuff here I don't know where to begin, so I'll just shoot from the hip here. The sun, which is the source of
everything
in our local burg here, is about as quiet as I've ever seen it. I mean, if it was any quieter, the dang thing would just shut up. So we're at solar minimum, and boy, is it minimum. Thus, the flares and the energy represents the CMEs, the coronal mass ejections that we saw during solar maximum that light up our skies and cause blazing auroras and all that kind of stuff. Ain't happening. Well, they do happen occasionally.
Right, because, I mean, it hasn't been that long since we had some pretty big flares. It wasn't,
yeah.
Right?
It was like a boom, and then it went quiet. That's
right, okay. Okay.
Yeah, we had a big X9 flare. You know,
several
months ago. But right now, it's really quiet. And while it's being really quiet, what kind of temperatures are you experiencing there in Missouri, eh?
Yeah, cold, man.
But that doesn't mean that there ain't nothing happening, because there's stuff happening. We had one frame on the solar C3 that was one of those really anomalous-looking pictures, and it had streaks flying all over the place. And I have it posted on my website.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't get on the website, what it looks like is it's the C3 LASCO camera, which blocks out the sun so you can see what's going on around it.
And that's the one with all the sparks and flares and everything flying all over the place.
Yeah, stuff flying all over the place. Now, hard to know what that is, whether it's energy particles or things, but you go to the LASCO's website itself, and it has a whole section called debris. And so they tend to classify it as debris.
We've seen that before, though, right?
We've seen stuff like this before. Now, when I saw it, I first off wondered if we're suddenly whizzing through the tail of one of the big comets that have come around lately, particularly the big rooster tail amazing comet we saw several months ago, Comet McNaught.
Oh, McNaught, yeah.
If it didn't dust our orbit, and now we're flying through it. But it didn't last. It was just a single frame.
Mm-hmm.
Good at death. I've seen it also happening when a meteor storm comes by.
Yeah, I've also seen them switch frames.
Yeah, I've also seen them blink out frames. Now, we just saw the passage on the LASCO 3, C3, which is a spacecraft way the heck out there, about a million miles. It's focused on the sun. We saw the passage of 96P Mockholtz.
Another comet.
Another comet. Not as spectacular as the other. And we also had a passage by a comet that did not appear on the SOHO cameras. It's called Comet 2007E2 Lovejoy.
Yeah, I talked about that a few weeks ago, yeah.
And then looming out there is Comet 2P Encke.
Encke?
Yeah.
That's an interesting name.
It's coming in, and it's a weird-looking duck, man.
Huh.
It's got a coma or a tail that extends out laterally on either side, like you holding your arms out in either direction. I've never seen anything like that before, and it's got the astronomers going, huh? It's like a bug hitting, splatting on the windshield.
Isn't Enki one of the names of the brothers in the Sumerian mythology?
It is, but it turns out that Enki was also an astronomer. The spelling E-N-C-K-E.
Well, that's what Carl Jung would call synchronicity.
I know.
Wow, that's very strange. The freaking astronomer's name was Enki?
Yeah.
Holy Lord.
I think Enki, the god Enki, the Sumerian god.
Right. And Enlil was the other one.
Different spelling. This is E-N-C-K-E.
Right. Remarkable.
Apparently we've had some rather significant gamma ray bursts recently. And now that's beyond our local space weather, these incredible things that even the world of astronomy is still scratching their head about.
Yeah, anyone who tells you they know what a gamma ray burst really is, they're whistling Dixie.
They're so powerful. At one time, they were called the Genesis signal because there's enough energy coming off of one of these things that accounts for almost all the matter in our known universe.
Yeah, it totally threw a monkey wrench.
You converted through Einstein's equation. Well, what was happening? It was threatening Einstein's equation because they couldn't figure out how the source of this burst broadcasting in all directions it seemed impossible.
Right, just too much energy.
Too much energy, and it threatened Einstein's equation. So they revamped the model in Great Britain somewhere and said, well, it's like a disk with a spike.
Yeah, they're good at that, you know.
Like a laser. And that's the only way we can preserve Einstein's equation.
Yeah, because the original idea for people who are out there who aren't real clear on what we're talking about, there are these particular gamma ray burst events, and they've actually named them. They call them now star quakes and magnetars, and they have words like this for them, which didn't even exist a few years ago. They just created new names for events as they observe them. But the idea was that when a magnetar actually had one of these outrageous outbursts, the original idea was that the reason that it threw all of our sensors off the scale was because that it just happened to be directed in our particular vector.
Yeah, right at
it. Right, but the truth of the matter was it was going in every direction, and that's what they couldn't account for. They were able to account for it if it was just, you know, a lucky shot that just happened to be coming our direction, because then it's not as great nowhere near the amount of energy. But when it turns out that the same amount of energy could be measured from any different vector, this is where it really becomes difficult to explain.
Yeah, and the deal is we get these gamma ray bursts, many times a month, and so the idea that we're being vectored or hit by a laser
right.
from a distant reaction of some kind, that many times a month, the probability is such that there must be infinite numbers of gamma ray sources out there to be able to zap us specifically.
Right, right.
Three or four times a month. I mean,
right.
How many that would have to be.
Right, or. Yeah.
In the probability mm-hmm. mathematics for several to hit us. So it's a real puzzle when astronomers are always saying stuff like, scientists are always saying stuff, well, something just happened that we have no idea. Which is good.
I love that. And then on the next page, they'll tell you how they know exactly what's happening in the whole universe. You know.
Well, we figured it out. We've named it. We've compartmentalized it. We've got a theory now, so we can forget it. Let's go on to the next.
Yeah. Yeah, that's sort of the business these days. So.
Cassini sent back some remarkable images of the North Pole of Saturn.
Was that pentagonal thing there?
Yeah.
Holy cow, what was that all about? Or what is that about?
The weather pattern or plasma pattern that the North Pole of Saturn is describing in perfect hexagon.
Perfect hexagon, yeah.
Yeah.
Is anyone trying to explain how that could happen? You know what I thought immediately was when we've seen those hexagonal and pentagonal formations inside the hurricanes over the last few years.
Well, maybe Saturn's a hexa world and we're a penta world. Because that's true.
Maybe we're moving into the hex world.
Various hurricanes that we've seen come through form hexagonal or pentagonal.
Right.
What do you call it in the center of the hurricane?
I don't know. This is geometry, yeah.
Yeah.
In the eye of the hurricane, yeah.
Yeah, the eye of the hurricane is close to geometry. Now, there has been a study, and I'm going to have to click on it. Of geometric whirlpools reviewed, where they can do something with water
and make it take a shape like that?
And a swirling vortex, and the water forms a pentagon. They can do that in the laboratory. This is just stirring up water.
Right.
Like going down the drain, unless you do it under laboratory conditions.
That is so weird because it's counterintuitive. You know, we have this idea that nature works in circles primarily, and when you have a vortex, especially, it, You know, it's nothing, you know, the intuition is just tighter and tighter circles.
What they did is they made these plexiglass buckets, you see, 13 and 20 centimeters across, I'm reading it, with metal bottoms that could be rotated at high speed by a motor. Then they filled the bucket with water and spun it to whip up the liquid into a whirlpool that rose up the sides of the container. Well, what happened is it formed an eye. And it can't be a more perfect pentagon. It's this absolute perfect pentagon, which, by the way, is the golden sextant. Ratio.
Mm-hmm.
Pentagon is a 2D representation of, instead of the linear Fibonacci series, when you extrude it into two-dimensional form, it's the pentagram. And when you extrude it into the three-dimensional form, well, some say that's the actual endoskeleton of the Earth. It's a duodecahedron.
That's Bucky Fuller ideas, yeah.
Duodecahedron, yeah, like Bucky's big dome with pentagonal sections.
Mm-hmm.
And the Russians from space, back in the early 60s, thought they could see this pentagonal skeletal structure on Earth.
The Russians?
The Earth grid. And they called it the Earth grid, and now a lot of
people have written about that.
And you and I have seen just blowing off the sun, the plasma blowing off the sun on the solar telescope. We begin to see geometry.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess old Plato and Pythagoras and all those old geometry freaks, Newton and all those guys, weren't developing their mathematics just for fun, but it's something they saw in nature and thus had to identify it somehow. Because, you know, things grow and expressing certain levels of geometry, like the sunflower and the Earth itself, and the water circulates around the drain and the structure of the spiral galaxy.
Let's talk about the golden section again for a little bit longer, because that is such a primary expression of nature. What's the deal with the golden section, with the golden mean?
Well, like pi, which is a universal constant, we got another one, phi, which is based on arithmetically on a progression of numbers where each integer is divided by itself, starting with 1. And you divide it by 1, you get 1. And then you add those two together, you get 2. I should have said, rather than dividing it by itself, you add it to itself.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 and 1 added together gets 3, and 3 and 2 together gets 5. Now, but when you divide those integers into one another, you get a what they call a phi, which they feel is a universal constant.
And this is at 1.618 plus or minus.
Yeah, 1.618. Now, that constant is, like I say, is probably not arbitrary, but springs from an attempt to define and analyze what's going on Earth, because many of the life forms on Earth express this, you know, like the spiral pattern within the sunflower,
mm-hmm.
and the honeycombs and things like that.
Right. And the human ear,
forms
of
geometry
too. Yeah.
And Leonardo's depiction of the human body was actually a graphic attempt to symbolize the five-pointed star and the development of the expression of the golden section in us.
In the human body, yeah.
And it's true that there's certain proportions in the body, like from the ideal sort of Greek-style human figure, the distance from the feet to the navel and the navel to the top of the head, you divide those two segments' lengths into one another, and you get 1.618. And the way the arms grow and the hand grows and the digits in your fingers, they all seem to express 1.618.
Hmm.
And the way that limbs on a tree grow,
mm-hmm.
you know, they put out a certain length, and then the next year's growth another length, and you divide those lengths into one another, you get 1.618. And then extruded from all this is a spiral, too, and it's hard to describe over TV here. It's hard to describe it, but you look up the golden mean or the golden ratio and the spiral extruded from these different, you form a square, you divide it in half and draw a diagonal and you spin that around, hit the baseline and pop up another one. rectangle, and you spin that, and, you know, you get a series of diminishing rectangles. Each one of them is the golden section, and then if you go, if you draw a spiral through the corners of each one of those projected rectangles, you get a spiral, and that's hard to describe. You just get, look it up on the internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
look it up on my site.
Yeah, you just go there and put golden mean or golden section, and you'll see great graphic
Billy Mercer, before he passed away, did an excellent thing on that.
Mm.
And where he graphed it all out for you. And the spiral of everywhere from water going down the drain to the structure of the spiral galaxy, these spiral arms that you see are extruded from the golden ratio. Thus, it appears to be a universal constant, which is likewise found in music, the tones on the scale and so on, the number, the frequency of the beats,
mm-hmm.
between your first and your third and your fifth, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They also express the golden ratio, and I believe colors do, color frequencies likewise do. Now, electronic frequencies, that's what interests me, you see. Can somebody make an electronic waveform generation? I really don't know what I'm saying or asking. But I have queried some geniuses on that. They said, oh, yeah, we can do that. Well, what will it do if you turn the dang thing on? You know?
Well, I don't know, I tell you. Well, there's all kinds of strange stuff up there. This thing on Saturn can
sound.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we were talking earlier about how some of these crazy architectural feats were done thousands of years ago. You know, sound is one of the ways that that may have happened too, you know.
Well, you know how I got interested in all this? I was an artist teaching art in college, and I began to try to analyze the geometry of some of the old masters and the new masters, going back to Leonardo specifically,
mm-hmm.
and Rubens, and on, and then up through Picasso and Edvard Munch, and who's the guy that did this, Miro. They seemed to organize their paintings ahead of time in terms of a grid.
What do you mean?
Well, it means that I was making plastic. I was looking at the outside shape of the rectangles they were using. They were very often using the golden rectangle to work on.
In other words, the one arm of the rectangle, or the one side of the rectangle versus the other side, divide one into the other, and you get, again, 1.618.
Yeah, and even the double square works. There is a series of rectangles that can be extruded from that.
Uh-huh.
Well, I actually got plexiglass. I etched some of the subdivisions. See, within that golden rectangle, you can, for instance, take a chalk line and flip a line to the square and then to the half a square. And you can make a grid, sometimes a very densely packed grid, that shows the subdivisions within the rectangle.
Mm-hmm.
How the golden ratio works interior within it. So I was actually scratching that stuff on plexiglass and going to the museums and holding the dang thing up in front of old paintings. And I was seeing how they organized their paintings using dynamic symmetry, one of which, one arm of the dynamic symmetry is the golden ratio. Now, there's more to it. There are other rectangles that are dynamic, you might say. Call them root 5 and root 3 and root 7 rectangles.
All right, you're losing us pretty, now. Come on.
But what we're trying to say is that the artists themselves were using a form of alchemy, both in architecture and their painting.
Right. Okay, I'm fully with you as far as
that. And
that
goes way back to the Egyptian pyramids and the structure of the Parthenon and so on. They were trying to express certain constants.
And I think the best artists of our day are doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Guys like this guy Paul Laffoley,
mm-hmm.
right? My God, you ever seen his work?
No, I haven't looked at it.
Holy shinola. I mean, it is unbelievable.
Well, what I did is I literally made quite large canvases, all of which disappeared somewhere in my life. And I would take a blue chalk line and I would make stretch the canvas to the golden rectangle, right?
Right.
And then I'd flip the chalk line through the key points, interior measurements within that rectangle. And then I'd have this really sort of complex grid, you know, lattice work.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I'd think, well, I'm going to weave into it like a weaver weaves into a loom. And so what I do is start with no preconception as to what I was going to paint here. But rather, I'd start weaving lines and paint and stuff through the... sometimes I'd take those lines and sort of fuzz them out and smear them so they became secondary shapes, you know. And then I'd look at the shapes, like you look at designs in water on the pavement or wallpaper or lines in stucco, and I use that to trigger my imagination, and then I begin to see things, you know. And often I saw landscapes. And so I'd pull the landscape out of the geometry, and each time it'd be something quite different.
Hmm.
Sometimes I'd see figures, animals.
Right.
But I'd use it as a trigger for the imagination. I'd start with very stiff geometry and then use it to fire up the imagination.
Amazing. All right, look, let's take another break here, okay?
Yeah.
Hey, when we come back, let's talk a little bit about current events and what's happening in the world, okay?
Yep.
All right, back in a minute, everybody. It's Kent Stedman, wonderful creative genius behind the website cyberspaceorbit.com, doing amazing work there for many years, and I'm privileged to be friends with him, and he's a great teacher of mine and a wonderful, part of my family, actually. So, anyway, we'll be back with him in just a few minutes. In the meantime, let's have another song here from Noah Earl. This one is called Mr. Mullenbrook's Paw Paw Grove. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. We'll be back in just a minute with Kent, and talk to y'all soon.
Old Mr. Mullenbrook across the alleyway got along just fine for a while. With his wife, God bless him, his life got more depressing. But when he talked about his pawpaws, he'd always smile. Mr. Mullenbrook's papa grew, and the old Fort Fairlane he still grew with the age of 93. What I wouldn't give for a pawpaw tree. Old Mr. Mullenbrook told all the neighborhood kids, come and eat your fill. They'll take them home for pancakes, take them soon for heaven's sake, cause if y'all don't eat them, nobody will. And Mr. Mullenbrook's papa grove, Neil Fort Fairlane, he still drove at the age of 93. What I wouldn't give for a pawpaw tree. Old Mr. Mullenbrook never caught us leaning up against his shed under the eaves. Butane lighters in hand, our little ragamuffin band would be gathered around smoking pawpaw leaves. And Mr. Mullenbrook's papa grove in the old Fort Fairlane, he still drove at the age of 93. And I wouldn't give for a pawpaw tree. Old Mr. Mullenbrook went easy one breezy night, right in the middle of spring. Followed his wife into the ether, probably anxious to meet her on God's big old front porch swing. Mr. Mullenbrook's papa grove, Neil Fort Fairlane, he still drove at the age of 93. What I wouldn't give for a pawpaw tree. Old Mr. Mullenbrook's house sold right away to a family of East Coast MDs. Once they took possession, they had a regular chainsaw session and then massacred the pawpaw trees.
He's gone as a pawpaw grove and gone as a fair lane. He still drove at the age of 93. But I wouldn't give for a pawpaw tree. Old Mr. Mullenbrook across the alleyway.
All right, Noah Earl from Postcards from Home, wonderful stuff. Mr. Mullenbrook's Pawpaw Grove. It's Mike who listens to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. And we've got Kent Stedman with us live from the cave in Seattle. Kent, hello.
Hello.
Thanks for sticking around. And
what were we going to talk about?
Well, I want to talk about the real world and the sort of news of the day. I got thinking about it when I mentioned Laffoley just a few minutes ago. This guy, Paul Laffoley, who I've become a huge fan of over the last 6 months or so, even though I've been familiar with him for quite some time. But he's just remarkable. And
another troublemaker.
And
artist.
A troublemaker, but but he's not even trying to make trouble.
No.
All he's doing
is... Yeah, well, all us artists are innocent.
Yeah, I mean, this guy, I mean, he couldn't care less about, you know, this. I mean, he's so cool about all this stuff. But anyway, in the midst of talking to him about art and imagination and creativity and the future, I mean, this is a guy who was friends with, like, Buckminster Fuller and worked with... Minoru Yamasaki, which was the beginnings of this whole can of worms that he opened with 9/11, but he was on the original design team for the World Trade Centers in 1962 and 1963. And on the program here on my show on the 12th of February, He revealed something that was just remarkable, and at the time, very few people sort of picked up on it. But over the last couple weeks, you know, people are realizing what he actually said, and that was that, you know, that essentially and exactly that charges were built into the buildings when they were built. They were designed that way, and it wasn't even a...
Not only that, a lot of the buildings have charges pre-installed.
Right. In fact, that was sort of the way it was done. And in fact, there's probably many buildings in New York City and probably other places right now that have already been built like that.
Now you're going to have me tearing the walls off my apartment here.
Oh, man. Well, so, you know, so that's big news. And the fact is that the Bin Laden Construction Company was involved in the construction of the World Trade Centers. Nobody even knows that. They were involved in the construction of it. Because Yamasaki was doing all kinds of work with the Bin Laden family in Saudi Arabia and all over the place. You know, they didn't just now become a billion-dollar construction conglomerate. They've been doing it for 50 years, at least. And so Yamasaki was doing all this business with them. They were here in New York. Laffoley laid the whole thing out, right? Not even knowing. I was just asking him about his background. You know, I wanted to talk about art and all this, but anyway, he's remarkable, and he just sort of casually and sublimely laid the whole thing out. And you know what? This is when you know it's the real deal. When you send it to everybody, Kent, including all the 9/11 truthers, and nobody says a word.
Hey, that happened to me too. Way to go! I put I put it up on my website.
Mm-hmm, I know, and you gave it quite a...
Went around to the forums and I posted it.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those rascally conspiracy forums.
Mm-hmm.
And
I don't know what everybody's waiting for.
I got kicked off of one of them. So when that stuff happens, it worked. You know?
Yeah, I know.
I got the feedback I wanted.
That's why I got my own forum. They can't kick me off there. You know, but yeah, that's exactly right, and it's been my experience too. And a lot of the people on my forum who sent it off to all the big names, right, and nothing. And I think it's quite telling because here you got a guy. What else do you want? You got a guy that was on the original design team, and he's not only that, he's a genius, recognized as such. He's absolutely brilliant when it comes to he's one of these. I would call him a polymath, you know, an absolute expert in many, many different topics. And he's also a brilliant architect and a tremendously accomplished artist who has no reason to be talking smack about anybody. He just,
I mean, he's just telling the truth, and it's obvious when you hear his voice.
I listened to the interview. He said that he was diagnosed with some learning disability or something like
that. Yeah, when he was real young. Yeah, the problem was he was diagnosed with having a learning disability. The problem was he was too damn smart.
Yeah, didn't have anything to say until he decided one day to start talking.
So his the first word that he ever said was Constantinople. When he was 6 months old, his parents said this, He said Constantinople when he was 6 months old. He never said another word. Till he was five.
My son's like that. When he was real little, just barely learning how to crawl, just coming out of the infant stage, he crawled over to my chair.
I was 20 when I learned Constantinople.
Brian crawled over to my chair, pulled himself up, and said, "Hi, Daddy." We all went, "Whoa."
Oh,
and
man.
And then it took him a few months to get back to that.
Well, anyway, there's obviously a whole lot of BS being peddled and there's all kinds of stuff going on, but at the same point, my position is one of great hope. I mean, I see things actually getting much, much better, regardless of what the news tells you. But I see things not coming apart. I mean, how is it that we're still here? I mean, if everything is so dangerous, and I mean, how is it we haven't been nuked to obliteration already?
Yeah, I got an item here. It says the Indian Point nuclear plant stable after explosion. Now, did you hear that on CNN? No.
Well, I don't even go there anymore, but I'm sure they didn't advertise it. And then we had this whole Iranian crisis that everyone thought this was it, whether it was manufactured or not, you know, that this was going to be the flashpoint for the Iranian business. And guess what? Regardless of what the Washington Post says, regardless of what the New York Times prints. I mean, just look at who owns the papers. But the point of the matter is, the fact of the matter is, at the end of the whole business, they sort of both shook hands, bowed out, and said, "Oh, I don't want to fight." You know? And the boys went home, and the girl went home, and, you know, now they're all talking tough, like they, you know, wow, they, who knows what the real truth of what happened was. But the bottom line is, it didn't turn into World War III.
No.
You know, it sort of just diffused itself. And I see a lot of that happening and a lot of freedom. I see a lot of people doing good stuff and not being hampered in the midst of all this talk of control. So, I don't know. I mean, I still do my thing, you know. No one's...
I had an old musician once tell me, Frank Higgs, he's long gone now. He said, "The worse times get, the better artists do."
Mm.
And it's almost like that. There were some other philosophers that said that, too, that when things get really chaotic, suddenly you find yourself with a certain level of freedom because all the powers to be are too damn busy trying to hold their trip together to bother with some screw-up hippie, you know, other than you might not be able to fly anymore.
Right. I don't even think that. They'll grab the wrong Mike Hagen, these clowns, you know. But anyway, I think that's true. I think we're seeing a lot of that right now, and I think it's great, actually.
I do political headlines on my website, but you know why? I didn't really start doing that until 9/11, and some sort of civic responsibility thing started kicking in. I thought to myself, well, you can't just be, you know, with your head in the stars all the time. You've got to take some responsibility, Kent. So I did a command center because I felt that a lot of stuff would be buried or lost or obscured. And so,
which it was, or it was tried to be.
Sure. So I did that. I made that record over about a year, and every day. And it was a pain in the butt is what it was. But it's still going on. I put up political things. And here's some of my headlines, like mystery white plane flying over Pentagon on 9/11 now identified.
Who was it?
I have to click, but it was an NSA, I believe, one of those white.
Yeah, one of these spook 30. Planes. Yeah, and they had no idea what was happening.
Pentagon
just happened to be there.
Pentagon to alert National Guard troops. Well, they're going back. Countries USA has bombed since World War II. Somebody sent me that.
That's a long list.
Brit sailors freed. Well, damn. France has its own 9/11.
What's that about? A couple of buildings were blown up there at the same on the same day, right? Something like that. I don't know. Maybe that was just a dream I had.
Link.
Lousy links.
I got a link to the sailor thing. I'm going to have to fix that.
Well, that whole sailor thing was sort of strange.
They had a building blow up that was sabotaged, too.
Yeah, on the same day, though.
Yeah. Lawsuit deals with substantive due process, racketeering, fraud upon the court, and violations of the separation of power. That's a lawsuit directed at our current administration. Kuwait media warns of planned U.S. strike against Iran in April.
Well, it's April.
The botched U.S. raid that led to the Iranian hostage crisis. New gag rule issued on U.S. scientists. Oh, here's one from home. BYU campus protests Dick Cheney speech.
Well, Dick Cheney was talking to BYU.
BYU. They invited Dick Cheney to give the inauguration.
What are they smoking?
I mean the graduation thing.
He must have something
and
like
it's
that.
It's the first time I've ever seen a bunch of BYU students starting to ramble around with protest signs. That's good, huh?
Yeah, I mean, if they're doing it at BYU, my gosh. They'll throw them out of there, you know, like they did you.
Detainee says he can, yeah, he says he can, what? Sounds like it's something I need to follow. What is that? Detainee says he confessed to stop torture. Oh, the guy that says he caused everything, 9/11 and
who knows. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he just said, well, I just said it because they were beating the snot out of me. Of course I would confess.
Confess to the
I confess
the
right
US
off the bat.
Destroyer
in fact,
cold.
Before they even torture me at all, I tell them I did the whole goddamn thing.
And too many other terrorist plots.
I make up a story to blow their mind. I say, you want to know what happened? You wait till you hear what happened.
Yeah.
You know, I'd twist a yarn and bend their brains.
Do.
Please don't hurt me, though. I'll tell you stories that you'll love them.
No, you know? It says that the U.S.
Don't pull my fingernails out. Or whatever you do.
The Department of Homeland Security has got a new office. It's in some old insane asylum.
That's perfect for them.
Huh?
I said, that's perfect for them. You know? Oh,
oh
God.
Boy.
Oh, please.
So then
let
I put up a
soon,
solution.
Lord.
So then I put up my solution is to quit using oil, you know, that this whole...
It's all about the oil.
Trip is juiced by freaking oil.
I know, the whole thing is an oil.
Why,
thing.
After all these years, when Henry Ford said, well, I'm going to design a car that uses other stuff besides the oil.
It ran on hemp oil.
Yeah. Somebody made a hemp car. I got that one here. Yeah, the whole car was made out of hemp.
Yeah, that's why it's been illegal for 70 years.
So what
that's a gonna, hard one to figure out. All these geniuses are out there debating. Oh, well, hemp, this, now what should we do? You freaking morons. You pay attention to history? Wake up, my God. Right in front of your face is clowns.
I went to visit my relatives in Spokane, and my wife's sister, she runs the big convention center over there, so we got to stay in the convention center. Well, I got talking to, this is Kent Sleuth here, I got talking to some guys coming out of the pub from Iceland.
From Iceland?
Yeah.
Yeah?
And, of course, the first thing I asked them, what are you guys doing up there? I hear you're developing hydrogen as an alternate fuel. In fact, I read a thing that said that you'll be the new Saudi Arabia of hydrogen. I said, oh, yeah, yeah. He said, we're running all our buses. Our public transportation's all hydrogen right now.
You know, I've been there.
Where?
To Iceland.
Oh, did you ride in hydrogen
buses? No, I was there 20 years ago, and they didn't have hydrogen buses then.
No.
So that tells you something, though.
They have beautiful chicks.
Oh, they did, yeah. And I was only there for like 16 hours, and I had a girlfriend. But anyway, in 20 years, like what I'm saying is that in 20 years ago, they didn't have hydrogen buses. They do now. You know, what did we have 20 years ago? The same damn thing we have today. So it tells you that the people here just either don't give a crap about making change, or they're just ignorant, or they're just not paying attention.
Well, the people say, well, golly gee, they can do hydrogen because they use geothermal up there to make their hydrogen. You know, in other words, they transfer their geothermal energy into a medium that can run their buses. And I'm thinking, yeah, well, let's see.
where I live here in Seattle is all geothermal. Why don't they get busy? I mean, I'm sitting on top.
And there's a million different ways. It's not
what
like
about
that.
Yellowstone? What about Mammoth Mountain? Yeah.
And it's not like that's the only way. It's not like hydrogen is the only thing. We have all these alternative sources that have been developed 100 years ago that people are again, too silly or stupid to recognize. And, you know, the work that Tesla was doing, the work that Maxwell did, the work that Wilhelm Reich, all these guys were into something, you know. And then, heck, when I was driving out to Las Vegas, and then when I went up to South Dakota just a month ago, two things. On the way out to Vegas, I was driving through, like, the Valley of Fire, you know.
Oh, I love that.
You know that place, right? And I'm thinking, why isn't this whole place covered with solar panels? It's the middle of the desert, 100 degrees every day.
Oh, that's a new
You know,
deal,
you can power the whole world with it. And then on the way up to South Dakota, you're in the middle of a wind tunnel from Colorado to Nebraska up to South Dakota. And I'm thinking, why isn't this just filled with wind, machines or whatever? It's not because it's impractical or something. It's because they just don't want to do it.
You want to hear a solar power breakthrough?
Yeah.
Quote, solar dyes could be put in windows and clothing.
Clothing?
And they're getting down to this dye that they could just put into mix into the glass. It'll turn it into a solar panel.
No, that's what I'm talking about. I want solar clothes, man. So I can just walk around and I don't need energy from anyone. I could power my iPod, you know, just plug it into my pocket or whatever.
Yeah, I could power my propeller beating.
And I could broadcast while I'm walking around downtown, you know, like have a computer. This is what's going to happen, by the way. You know, I was reading an article in Wired magazine, which is now sort of conservative. But they were talking about virtual space that would sort of evolve around you. In other words, the future of the Internet and your relationship to it is no longer one of a keyboard and mouse. It's one of, you know, the interface is now is going to become much more seamless where, for example, you wear on your lapel a holographic projector and, you know, on your belt buckle is a 2 gig chip that's faster than anything that, you know, that we're familiar with now. And between the two of these things, you can actually project a three-dimensional space around your body, walk around in a virtual world and have heads-up displays of, you know, anything you want. Use your fingers and your hands to move between, you know, functions and websites and softwares and all this stuff. I mean, it's like the Lawnmower Man or something. But
I want a hologram broadcast around me that turns a grizzly old fart into Conan the Barbarian. That'd be cool, man.
Well, I think we're almost there. If we don't blow ourselves to bits in the meantime.
Or Rockefeller, turn me into Rockefeller.
Oh, you don't want to be that asshole.
Well, why not? Get as long as they're going to put B66 chips in it.
Putting any chip in anybody.
I want a Rockefeller chip, man.
Well, yeah, the day you put a Rockefeller chip in, the day I come over there and I'm going to Conan the Barbarian out of you. Anyway. Well, I wonder what's going on. I mean, there's all this talk about that sort of stuff, but at the same time, it is a conundrum, Kent, because people who decide to can be as free as they want to be, and no one's putting any chips in me, you know? In the meantime, I'll talk on my radio show about it. You see what I'm saying? It's like the control that everybody assumes is out there really isn't. You just have to exert your own.
Well, if they put a chip in you, isn't that sort of like a sliver? I mean, you get a sliver, you dig the damn thing out.
Yeah, just take it out, I mean, or something. I don't know.
Of course, you might not be able to buy anything.
Yeah, well, I grow my own, you know.
That's it.
What else is happening? We got a few more minutes. What do you got to finish things up with? What do you think is happening? What do you want to leave people with?
Well, I'm toying with reports coming in with some weird graphs about the Earth wobble, the Chandler.
Oh man! And what about a new?
But I don't know. I haven't reached any conclusions yet. In fact, I haven't reached any conclusions about anything.
I have to ask you about that because. On your site, it says Earth axis change, and then a question mark. Now, there was a story that came...
That was not my quote. Somebody sent
No, no, no. And I'm not trying to put it on you. But there was a story from the Indians in Alaska.
Yeah, that's the clincher.
Right. Now, get this. I got a call from my friend Star in Hawaii today, right? You know Star and Michael Heisen?
Yeah, I heard the tail end of your...
Well, off the air when we were talking, she told me that she believed, and that she's been talking to people that believe that the Earth's axis really did shift in some way.
Well, the Inuit are seeing the sun coming up.
I know the sun. Not only is the sun coming up at a different time there, it's coming up in a different position on the horizon. I mean, these people have been staring at the sun for thousands of years. They know where the sun is supposed to come up.
It's integral into their survival.
It's and into their mythology, the whole way they live. So I don't know what's going on, but as always, Kent, we just keep watching, I guess. But there's just the world is more strange and wonderful and frightening and weird than we can imagine, I think.
Yeah, it says here, for the past several years, residents in the high Arctic have observed that the winter dark season is ending earlier than usual, with the sun coming up at a different place than the people are used to seeing.
Yeah, I mean, there you have
it. So they've appealed to the scientific community to explain what the hell's going on. Well, they'll get an explanation, all right. They'll say, oh, it's nothing to be worried about.
Yeah, the one guy said, oh, it's a refraction from the sun. And, you know, you're not seeing what you're seeing. You're seeing a reflection of the sun that's not really the sun. I mean, it was a silliness, the explanation that I saw.
It says there are notices of more daylight earlier, and the dark season is not the real dark season that we used to know. This year the sun started coming up so fast that it's almost like April when it's mid-February. Continue article. Well, I won't continue.
Well, we've had weird weather here. I mean, it was like springtime a week and a half ago, and then all of a sudden we were all excited because we had a cold and sort of a nasty winter here in Missouri, and then it seemed to be breaking free into springtime, and then for the last week it got really cold again. I mean, cold. It was 11 degrees like two nights ago, Kent. And people who plant, I mean, and it's a big problem for farmers and planters of fruits and all this sort of stuff, because they had already began to bud.
It impresses me that in our complex sort of yuppie society that we live in now, that people still walk out on their front porch every morning and look at the weather.
Yeah, they still
depend
on that.
What's the weather like? Then your neighbor comes out. Look at the weather. So the first thing we talk about after crawling up in the morning is the first thing we check.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Irregardless of the stock market, cosmic philosophy.
Yeah. Well, the weather's weird. What's
the
weather doing
first
up there?
First thing we say is, let's talk about the weather.
What's happening up there in Seattle? Good weather, bad weather, weird weather?
Well, Seattle hasn't been too bad. We had a couple of days of warm, and then it chilled off again. But, you know, Wendy's in Florida, my wife.
Yeah, with your mother-in-law, yeah.
It's been down to like 32 degrees. Cold. I don't get it either, because I look at the radar chart from UNISYS and so on, and it shows all this, the weather patterns predominantly streaming into Florida from the Gulf. Now, what's that? That's all cold down there now? What's going on? All right, it must be... The tropical weather is somehow mating with the Arctic weather. And we sure did have some tornadoes there for a while. Did you have any come through you?
We had nasty weather a little bit, maybe one or two night in the evenings, about a week and a half ago maybe. But since
got
then,
it in Arkansas.
Yeah, and last April, you know, we had pretty wild weather, but that's sort of typical here to have wild weather in April and May, but we'll see. I mean, I sort of dig it, as long as it stays, you know, within arm's length.
Well, we haven't had anything really cool, except that since the last big windstorm several months ago, around Christmas. Boy, that was intense. I really enjoyed that. 100-mile-an-hour steady wind. Saw a lot of electrical phenomena.
I'm sure.
Saw the whole sky turning blue. Yeah, people say, well, it was a transformer blowing up. Bull crap, there's something going on way up in the sky where the whole sky was, the whole from horizon to horizon was turning blue. I looked out my back window with the screaming of the witch storm going on, and there were these little the ball lightning going on all over. They were crawling around out in the lawn out behind my apartment complex. That was neat. Wendy slept through the whole thing.
Of course.
I couldn't sleep.
Yeah, Wendy. She's been to Baalbek since then. She's never been the same, you know? All right, Bartle, what do you say, brother? I think it's time to wrap it up, huh?
Well, I guess we should say something significant, but tonight we'll say nothing significant.
Well, I think that's significant in and of itself.
Everybody just hang loose and enjoy life.
That's right. Yeah, because nobody really knows what's going
on
anyway.
Don't read
so.
Cyberspace Orbit. It'll ruin your brain.
Oh. In a good
go
way.
Go fishing, which is what I should be doing.
Well, you come out to my place in June, and we're going to do some fishing, all right?
Pick some music. Go fishing.
All right, buddy.
Okay.
Everybody, Ken Steadman, cyberspaceorbit.com on the web, of course, and you can link there anytime from my site at mikehagan.com. We'll talk to Kent in the future for sure, as we always do. Thank you, Kent, so much for your time and your effort and everything that you've been doing, not just today, but for a long, long time. And he's certainly someone to keep your eyes on and pay attention to, because he cuts through a lot of the stuff, you know. Anyway, all right. A couple minutes before 2, I'm going to say goodbye here. Ruthie's not going to be in tonight, so I'll probably sign us off the air here in a few minutes. But we'll finish one off here with Noah Earle, one more song from Postcards from Home. This one's called Bob White Twilight. And I thank you to Noah for the wonderful music. Thanks to Kent one more time for the great conversation. And on the web, cyberspaceorbit.com for Kent one more time. And Noah Earle on the web, Noah, N-O-A-H, Earle, E-A-R-L-E.com. It's Mike Hagan, and it's Radio Orbit. Good to be with you one more time next week. Susan Weed. Going to be amazing. She's a great woman, and we'll talk about the Earth and what we can do to get back to her. I love you guys all. Take care. Talk to you soon. It's Mike, Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM.